Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, iPad, Android tablets, and other mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome, everybody. This is the Weekend Confirmed show number 120. Don't really know why that was important, but 120.
Booyah.
That's hot. And taking the role of senior poopy pants today will be Mr. Jeff Cannata.
I love loving things, Garnett.
No, you are senior poopy pants today. You've already established yourself as senior poopy pants. If you're wondering what we're talking about, watch the pre-show video. That has the documented truth right there.
On behalf of the listeners, I was trying to not have a 3-hour discussion about Assassin's Creed 2 on the show.
We don't even go 3 hours. I think you have a misconception about time. If you think that's 3 hours,
it
I can only imagine
like
what you think 5 minutes
is like. Talking about Assassin's Creed 2.
Maybe. That's what she said.
Anyway, I am happy to be here. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Cannata 2N1T.
And Miss the lovely Miss Andrea Renee is here.
Thank you.
Sporting her new looks specifically for her Assassin's Creed. No.
Don't give it away.
No, never mind.
Oh, I guess they'll find out if they watch the
preview. Native American
yes.
regalia. Yes.
But you can't announce
that. Tomahawk. Feathers in her hair.
Yes.
A wolf pelt. Betwixt her shoulders.
Betwixt.
Better than between anything else.
And we haven't even had any Fireball whiskey yet.
It's already
That's
up.
What oh, was missing.
Look at that. It arrived.
Oh, snap. It's here. Fireball. Now the show can really get underway in earnest. Stop the presses. Anyway, so what we were going to announce was that she's hosting a panel at Comic-Con next week, which is where both she and Mr. Jeff 2N1T Cannata will be.
Yeah, I have a panel as well.
Yes, so, by the way, if Friday you need night. To see anything about Comic-Con next week, you should watch the Totally Rad Show, who'll be covering it from San Diego.
Yes. Yes. That will be actually the week after Comic-Con, but we'll have a big wrap-up show on Monday, and then you'll see our panel and cool stuff all week long.
Nice. Yeah, we have a lot of cool stuff, too, planned at Machinima. We'll be live-streaming the entire convention.
Just gotta one-up me like that.
And we'll be debuting the first trailer for Halo, Forward Unto Dawn, the live-action series coming exclusively to Machinima Prime.
No
on YouTube this fall.
Come on.
Did Halo. You see the teaser trailer? Right? The teaser trailer was awesome. It's going to be
oh
so
oh my God.
Cool.
Okay. No. That will not stand. That was the fucking dumbest teaser trailer ever.
That's why it's
Halo,
a teaser.
The logo. Look, there's Master Chief. Be impressed.
That's what a teaser trailer is about.
No, a teaser trailer might at least give you a little flavor. It's not just like Master Chief. Yeah, he's in it.
We are making new Halo
well,
game.
What if people were curious about whether Master Chief would be in it or not? It clears that up.
Like maybe before he was a master.
Look, the series may well be cool, and it's awesome chief. That you guys have this cool deal to
Journeyman
distribute it.
Chief.
And I'm down with all that, but you can't call that a cool trailer. That was
oh,
yeah.
Jesus.
I can, and I did.
The sound.
So
just
deal
heard
with it.
Is
all right.
The show going off the rails. Yes.
When was it ever on the rails, Jeff? When was it on the rails? By the way, at the other end of the table, Mr. Jeff Mattis is here.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Happy belated 4th of July, boobs, beer, barbecue, all that good stuff. You know, American stuff.
Yeah.
Whatever. Muscles. Things. So, fireworks.
Fireworks. And if, yeah. By the way, if you haven't already seen the super video from San Diego, it's pretty hilarious. Do you guys see that already?
Oh, yes. We were talking about it while we were waiting for you to arrive.
It's pretty amazing.
18 minutes of fireworks in 15 seconds.
Yeah. And it actually proves that you really don't want to see all of the fireworks shot off at once.
This is true.
Yeah, in other news, San Diego has no ozone now.
It's all right.
Thank you, sir.
It'll replenish.
Sprite in it or?
No, just give it to me straight.
Yeah. I forgot who I was talking
oh
to for a second.
Jeez, could you fill
forgot
it up a little bit more?
Put mine in the sippy cup.
He gave me the biggest glass of Fireball whiskey I've ever seen.
Well, you impugned my
children
my
today.
Richard,
right,
do you see this glass? Do you see how big this glass
yeah,
is?
It's going to be empty in 3,
2, 1.
Oh, my Lord.
And
I do. Okay, before we start, I do have to say the last time I was on the show, We made a joke in the last block about how I get trolled by some of the Shackers and some of the people on NeoGAF that listen to the show. And I got a really nice message from one of the fans of the show on my Facebook page. And I told him for writing me such a sweet message.
His username is Mom42.
No.
I like how you said his.
His name is Robert Peacock. And I said I would give him a shout out on the show for writing me such a nice message. So... here's your shout out. Thank you so much. I appreciate all the fans of the show.
Okay. Way to kiss ass.
I actually shot a peacock.
I'm not kissing ass.
Let's talk about video games.
What? I think it's important to acknowledge.
No, hold on.
People.
I want to hear this story. You shot a peacock with a paintball.
Yeah, an accident. Once I was out in one of those paintballs.
You were just attracted by the plumage.
No, yeah, it was more like it was my first time paintballing. You know, you have those masks on that. What?
It's funny. Oh. My first time paintballing, I saw a peacock. I shot the fucker.
I was like, "What?" No. I was, you know, you have those masks on, and it was the first round. It was all foggy.
And I morphed on your phone.
Yeah, we were out in the middle of nowhere, and there was a peacock on the range.
Why a peacock? I mean, a turkey I would get, but a peacock?
No. That's why I shot it, because I was like, "What?"
If I don't know what it is, I'm gonna shoot it
and ask questions later.
Fucking peacock.
Yeah, sorry, peacock.
Man. Has anyone else also ever paintballed?
Yeah, I have.
Never.
Never?
Dan
Trachtenberg.
I've seen the bruises people come back with.
Dan Trachtenberg's bachelor party was a paintball.
Was it fun?
Yeah.
So
there were a lot of welts, yes.
I remember one time Shu got together like a whole Ziff Davis floor worth of people to go play paintball, and it's like, I hadn't done it before, and it's ridiculous how quickly, especially if you're a gamer, how quickly the video game I must win mentality kicks in, and you're just like, except then it's real, and you're throwing yourself around, and you're like, done, and I'm done, and I look down, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I have like a cut on my leg, and my elbows are all scraped, and I was like, how'd all that happen?
Yeah.
Well, it's also one of those things, you want to play with a group of people that you know, so, or at least similarly out of shape people, because... the guys that are there that every weekend are like in ghillie suits and like have their own custom gear
of
and
course.
Shit. And you're just, yeah.
Actually, a couple of people showed up in the group that were like that with like the mechanical loaders, the electric loaders.
Right.
And they like, you know, they trill their fingers on like the trigger and it's like, and the paintballs just come flying out. You're like, oh, that's going to suck.
Yeah. Almost as painful as getting shot for real.
Yeah.
Not really.
So video games. We're at a show about video games.
Oh, yeah. We are?
Video games.
When does that start?
As soon as you make it happen.
All right. Well, I thought I was not. You didn't want to talk about what I wanted to talk about.
Assassin's Creed 2.
I just wanted to talk about Assassin's Creed 2 as relates to expectations for 3. So maybe we'll get to that. Maybe we won't. I will make sure, though, that we get to DayZ, which people have been very excited about us getting to. And Jeff Cannata braved installing Arma 2 and downloading DayZ. And we have not heard from him since.
That's right.
What else have we got coming up? We've got some interesting commentary from Awada to the shareholders about what Wii U will and will not be in the next generation. We've got some information from Blizzard about the need for a endgame in Diablo 3. Mm-hmm. Go figure.
Interesting.
Who would have thunk it?
You would think they would have.
Just grind forever, guys. Don't you get it?
Grinding's fun.
Just grind.
Yeah, it's kind of underrated. We've got some Penny Arcade action going on down there. You're into the Rain Slick Precipice?
I am. I'm wrapping it up, actually.
And Andrea fell into Dawn Guard.
I did.
I'm not really surprised.
Very deep.
Did you go Dawn Guard or Vamp?
In my first playthrough, I went Vamp.
What, are you already on a second playthrough?
No, not yet. But I have a strategic save point.
Jeff, I think she just out Skyrim credited you.
Probably true. I haven't even touched Dawn Guard yet.
What?
No.
Well, you?
I know.
Jeff,
I mean,
Cannata?
I have at trade shows, but not at home. Yeah.
How much would he love it?
I mean, it's really fantastic. I'm still getting used to the controls of the Vampire Lord. Like, because it has, well, do you want to talk about it now? We can talk about it now.
That was a bitch.
You're talking about it.
Yeah,
now.
I was doing it too.
Well, okay. Well,
if you're going to host a panel, you're going to have to learn how these things work.
I don't know if this is considered like spoilery. I mean, we kind of have to talk about it in order for people to get an understanding of what it is.
Did you take it out of the refrigerator today or yesterday?
No, a couple days ago.
That is spoiled.
Well. Oh.
That was the worst joke.
That
in
was
history
a terrible
of
joke. I'm not far
I
enough
like how
along
she
in the
into it.
I'm not far along enough in the quest to give away any spoilers about what happens at the end because I don't know. I'm not there yet. But basically, you get when you download the DLC when you load up your game, you can either... I went with my older character. I was like a level 47 or 48 because I didn't want to start with a really low level character to go into a DLC area. And you get you know, this message saying, oh, you hear all the soldiers and all the cities talking about, oh, do you hear they're starting up the Dawn Guard again?
You know, almost that... did an accent there. And then you retreated from it.
I
saw you start, and then it was like,
I got nervous.
I'm not going to be able to sustain this.
I was starting up the Dawn Guard, and then I took an arrow to my buttocks.
Jeff, you heard they're starting up the Dawn Guard. We got to get in there and do it.
So you go to this castle place outside of Riften, and that's when you meet the Dawn Guard, and you are sent to this island off of Solitude where you meet this group of vampires where you then decide to become a vampire lord and work with the vampires, or you say no. And I don't know what happens when you say no.
You become vampire food if you say no, I would assume.
Well, that was what I assumed too, but I mean, that would kind of make...
Or you win and join the Dawn Guard and carry the banner for the forces of light.
Actually, yeah. I like that one better.
That's what I want to do, but I kind of felt like I was obligated to see what it was like to be a vampire lord because they have their own skill tree. And so when you convert into vampire lord form, you have a whole new set of powers.
Including
that you level up. Yes.
Or hovering.
Yeah, so you have two main...
There are two sides.
You have like
to
a melee attack, and then you have, when you're flying, when you're hovering, you have your left trigger is a different attack that you can change out, and then your right trigger is you suck life force out of whoever you are aiming it at. It's like a magic spell.
Vampirically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So far it's really fun. It's cool. The only, like... shitty part is that you have to travel in the dark all the time. You can travel in the sunlight for a little while if you feed off a lot of humans, but the more humans you feed on, the weaker your powers get. So the longer you go without feeding, the stronger your vampire powers get. I know, it seems backwards, doesn't it?
Have they not watched Buffy?
Or True Blood?
What's that?
An amazing show on HBO.
Ah, okay.
Yes.
Anyway, that is a little bit backwards. I think one of the things that, you know, Steve Watts played it for Shaq. He's written a number of diary entries, which we call the editorials when we have someone following a game like this where it's difficult to review because it's sort of a process to get into it. And I think the thing that he noted that stood out the most to me was that, you know, as has been the case with other Bethesda games, after they've laid out the world, when they come back and do DLC packs, they're able to do much more focused content. Mm-hmm. And that this was really he was really like digging on it.
Yeah, it's really cool. I like that how when you are in your vampire lord form, like you, the more kills you make, the more points you get to unlock in the special vampire lord skill tree. Like it has its own separate skill tree aside from the regular Skyrim trees.
So how does this compare to other traditional vampire narratives where there's like, you know, there's always like a Dracula figure who's like the head of the, it's not a coven, what do you call a family, I guess, right? Is it family? Vampire's family? Anyway, whatever. Head of the family. Are you trying to ascend to be like the head vampire of Tamriel or what's the setup for why you want to be in the Legion of the Dark?
I'm not sure. I don't think I'm far enough along in the story to know what the end game is for the DLC, like where you want to become. It would make sense that you would eventually overthrow the lead guy and take over his castle that's on this island off of Solitude. You meet his daughter. Like you go someplace and you meet this girl and you find out that she was like trapped inside this like weird stone coffin, and you unlock it and she comes out and she's like, oh, I don't know where I'm in, I need to go home and find out what's happened. And then you follow her back to the island, and that's where you meet the vampires.
More importantly, can you get the chicks?
Can you get the chicks?
I want Thrawn's, basically.
Well, she's your companion for a while. Like, you have a vampire companion.
I mean, wouldn't that be the reason you would go vampire?
Of course. Is there another reason?
I know, it's like mind control, bam.
You do have a skill.
It's almost as good
you
as
do
being
have
invisible.
A skill called vampire almost. Seduction. So you can seduce humans, and then while they're seduced by you, you can feed on them.
Have you used that skill?
I have.
Was it satisfying?
It was very.
How'd you feel about that?
Felt kind of dirty, I'm not going to lie.
But you liked it, didn't you?
Well, you know, I don't like feeding on humans a lot because then it weakens your powers. Which
so
I
what do you feed on instead? Cows?
No, you don't feed at all. You go hungry.
See, I don't understand this. Every vampire thing I've ever seen is like, if you feed off the animals, it's not as good. If you feed off the humans, it's better. But you have to accept that sacrificing of your own internal humanity. They've taken that out of us.
Well, yeah, maybe, I was a little confused by that myself.
Maybe the hungrier you are, the more vampiric you are because you... or need blood so bad that your powers are welling up and...
Yeah, that's the... Every day that you go without feeding, like, there'll be, like, a little message that says, as your hunger grows, so do your vampire lord powers. Hmm. Like, it'll unlock... Like, if you go an extra day without feeding, it'll unlock another skill in your tree.
So, are they allergic to garlic? Can you eat garlic? Does it cause extra damage?
I actually haven't picked up... Oh, I haven't picked up any garlic yet. I haven't found any.
I'm kind of curious.
That would be an interesting thing to know.
Right.
What about the werewolves?
I haven't run into any werewolves
Sounds
yet.
Like a love triangle. Mm.
The wolf. The castle.
Jeff, are you going to play this game?
At some point, yes, definitely.
Really?
I will. It is not what draws me to Skyrim. It is not what draws me to those games. I'm not excited about being a vampire. Never.
Is it specifically the vampire storyline?
Yeah, it just doesn't... It's not... When I heard this DLC was announced, I was not, like, chomping at the bit. I was excited that there is DLC, and I'm excited for more. And I think the Dawnguard storyline will probably be pretty fun to play through, and I'm planning to do that. But I played a lot of it at E3, and, you know, I just – that's just not what I come to that game for, is to be a vampire. It's not – I'm not – I was –
But what about
I played
being,
a werewolf a little bit, and then I went back to my old save game. I was like, I don't want to be a werewolf.
Yeah, I never did the werewolf companion storyline when I played through it originally either. I had no desire to be a monster, and that's exactly what you are in this DLC. You – like, the whole point is to turn yourself into this monster. Like, the vampire lord is not like a humanoid form. It's like
– Well, I've seen
it's
it.
Like
yeah,
it's
like
a gargoyle.
Rad.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it pops you into third person immediately when you go into that form.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, which is interesting.
But you can be the anti of that.
Right. That's where I wanted to go.
You could be the hero that goes, F yeah, vampires. That's cool.
I mean, I think it's cool that the game is robust enough to support all those different, really wildly different play styles. I think that's cool, too. It's just not the I'm not into that storyline. It just doesn't do anything for me particularly.
Well, what would you have been hoping for Skyrim add-on?
Oh, I mean, just any kind of interesting side quest. I mean, I don't take my sort of
I'm just
ambivalence
curious.
As no. negativity. It's just sort of I'm ambivalent about it. It didn't do anything. That particular idea didn't tickle my fancy.
What's really interesting to me is I think of Skyrim as the, you know, the current leading evolution of the sandbox single player Western style RPG. So that it's more about your character and your like those things that you do just because you're doing them in the context of playing inside the world. And so I don't think of it as something where, oh, well, here's a new set of quests and I'm not into it because I don't really identify with the storyline. I just would think that it would be more about, oh, I can choose one side or the other, and being heroic would be being heroic.
Yeah.
But you obviously take it in a different way.
I think about it more like here's a chapter that we're giving you that wasn't in the game before. And it's right. this... this modular element that we can plug in that gives you a different chapter to a story. Mm-hmm. And that chapter just doesn't – like, for example, I really dug Red Dead Redemption. Mm. Really dug that game. Played all the way through it. Loved
I did
it.
Too.
Zombie thing came out. Yeah. I liked the idea that they were doing that. It's kind of cool. It just didn't tickle my particular fancy.
Interesting.
I didn't rush out and play that.
See, I didn't do that either. But to me, zombies in the Wild West – was more disparate than fighting and protecting against vampires or being a vampire
right.
in
That's
a fantasy
That's not my problem
setting.
With it. My problem with it isn't that it feels out of place.
It's just you don't dig it.
I'm not interested. I've had enough of vampire stories from either perspective. And I'm not excited to explore that world and find out how their take on it and read the lore and find, you know.
No, although I will say that the Red Dead zombie thing was pretty atmospheric and cool. Mm. Like I mean, it is, yeah, it's if it doesn't rub you the right way, it's not going to rub you the right way.
Oh, but it was done really well.
But it was done really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we had consensus on that.
Like, really kind of creepy. Yeah.
So Skyrim also points to another interesting thing, which is you spent a tremendous number of hours in Skyrim, if I remember correctly.
I did.
And you got to the end of the game.
Yes.
And you enjoyed it quite a bit. So yes. How would you compare where you got to in your journey with Skyrim and what you did at the end with how you feel about Diablo 3. And now that you're at the end of Diablo 3.
That's interesting.
You see what I'm saying? Because both of them are these big games that we are RPGs.
Very
we come
different.
Back to them. They are different
Very
in
different.
Mechanic. However, both of them, you get to an end game, and then there is still a desire to continue playing.
Well, it's different in the sense that the way you get to the end of Diablo has a very linear storyline. You
yep.
can get to the end and then start that exact same storyline again. Yes, there are certain dungeons that you won't see, only playing through one time, that you know randomly populate the world, etc. And it's cool that when a new one pops up, I'm like, oh my gosh, I haven't seen that. It's super cool that I can go into my achievements and see exactly how many dungeons I've never seen before, etc. But the draw of Skyrim, even when main quest lines are completed, is to poke around in the corners of that world and see things that I never saw. And that's
right.
that is tremendously exciting for me because I feel like the world is so big and sprawling and interesting that even something that you would never touch going through every main storyline in the game, there's still something interesting in that little tidbit corner that, oh, maybe I never went there or saw that thing or had this behavior of this bad guy that just happened this one time because it happened.
Well,
you know,
when you play Diablo 3, do you sort of, I find myself glossing over a lot of the narrative in that. Like, I'm like, what do I have to kill? I have to go kill this? All right, off we go. Like, I'm not sitting there talking to a bunch of characters and like finding out about lore and stuff.
No, a lot of people gave me shit for complimenting the narrative in the game. And I acknowledge that it's a little bit unsurprising and
And it's completely unnecessary to play. You don't need
true.
It to play the game.
But I really liked the delivery system, and I liked the lore. And I always, when I encountered a new enemy or thing that triggered a lore thing, I always listened to that VO bit because it was always interesting and well done and sometimes funny. And
well, those I liked because I could play them while I was cruising around killing stuff.
Right.
Whereas if I'm in a town hub, I'm not going to – I just didn't feel that draw to like – because nothing, that they, would, nothing
with...
that they would tell me would, you know –
Yeah,
make change the,
well, that's
my
just
gameplay
it.
Experience.
The delivery system is a 10-gauge needle. It's just jacking it into your vein while you're still playing along because
right.
nothing's going to interrupt the drip of the
right.
drug of Diablo to keep you going and clicking and moving forward, right?
Yeah.
So I get what you're saying. So why do you think it is that now there's this concern about what's the end game of Diablo 3? Because the end game was always that you played through it and got all your stuff and finished the game and went back and cycled it again if you wanted to.
Well, it seems like based on the statement that came out of Blizzard this week, it seems like they... by their own acknowledgement, overestimated the draw of the pure item grind, and that they anticipated people, like they did with Diablo 2, would just continue to place things over and over to get better items. And yet they sort of self-sabotaged with the auction house because the...
I never heard that. Someone said they were... I would never have heard that opinion.
Continue to gloat. I fully admit that you had that...
Look, I'm only right once every 10 years, so I have to get my kicks in.
I remember that episode. I was here the episode that you felt very strongly, to put it nicely, about the auction houses.
Yeah, and you know, I don't think that it's... It hasn't ruined the game. I think that is overstating it. I think it has... shortened the lifespan of the game for me because I would happily still be playing.
How many hours do you have in it?
I have 100 hours into it, well over 100 hours into it. So, and I have not many more in Skyrim. I would be surprised. I should look to see which game
I
have more
hours. Actually, I'd be really interested if you do that.
It might be Diablo.
I'm really curious.
Which is very funny. Ironic, I would say. But, so it's hard for me to say, it sucks that I can't keep playing this game that I've gotten that much joy out of and that put that much time in that has been really fun. But I do want to keep playing it, and I do want to have something to do. I really do want to have something to do. And, you know, what Blizzard said this week is this isn't World of Warcraft. This isn't World of Warcraft. We're not making World of Warcraft. We know that, but we also know that there has to be something else for you to do at the end of the game because what – the systems that we have in place, while robust and while they said they're very proud of them, they don't sustain long-term end-game play.
I don't know how a player will ever get to cash that check that they've written because I can't imagine what it is that they're going to do if they're not. Here's the problem, that they've set themselves up in a – and part of it's not even their fault. Part of it is simply the vast popularity of World of Warcraft meant that when people started playing the next role-playing game with characters, with loot, with an auction house, that they were going to start drawing all these similarities. And then especially when it became, oh, I see what it is. This game's more about mechanics and getting stuff for my tune and then getting my tune better and then going back and playing up. Like, I've done this. This is World of Warcraft. And then they got to the end. They're like, wait, aren't there like some epic, you know,
raids,
epic group raids, yeah, or something? Like, there's supposed to be something, yeah, for me to do here. And the answer is, no, this is Diablo. This isn't World of Warcraft.
Right.
And to say, oh, we needed to give you something else, I think almost is a mistake on their part. And I'll say, and I realize that from a player standpoint that you would love to see more, but how do they ever follow through on that? How do they ever, like, that's all, I almost feel like this is gonna be a false, it's gonna give us false hope. It's like, oh, there's gonna be something. Really? What?
That is a very, very good question. Because and
we're still waiting for PvP.
PvP is going to be the 1.1 patch, which they say is not near. It's
right,
not close.
Like, now, then, remember how this has gone? We took it out of ship, and then it's going to be after ship, and now it's like, oh, by the way, that's not even really
it's
close
It's not close,
yet.
And then whatever this next thing is that they're going to add in at the end of the game is not close after that. So that's coming, they say, after PvP and not near to PvP, and PvP is not near.
If we do a show 240, we will probably be sitting here talking about what it might be.
But you have to admit, you have to assume that they have a expansion in the works.
Of course.
And that will revitalize the game as it always does. And I think it's interestingly ambitious that they're saying that a patch is going to add something to do at the end game, and it's not going to be equivalent to what a World of Warcraft patch offers.
Hey, if they can come up with something creative, more power to them. I think, though, the other thing that they're suffering from is the sheer ferocity with which people consume the game. Look at yourself as an example. You've already got 100 hours into it.
But
like, that's
that
a,
is not,
that's a pretty aggressive...
That's not a blindside. That's not something that they couldn't have anticipated.
No, not at all. But it does speak to how they should have, you know, developed and designed.
I don't know that they could have done anything. I'm saying that from a player standpoint, it's like you're so into it and you're consuming it with such a, you know, high pace that you want more and more and more and more, and you get to the end and you want more and more and more, and you go back through. But there is a point at which there's no way to sate that appetite.
Yeah, well, replaying the same storyline and the auction house only... They sort of like make the game seem on its surface more like deeper and more robust than it is, right? Like you'd get, it's got all this stuff and it's got, you know, I can battle with friends and I'll, you know, bring them in to help me. But really it's a linear adventure game that you play through in a finite amount of time, and you get to the end and you're like, okay, you want to start over?
And that's the question that I've been wrestling with is, have I just finished the game? Have I just done the things that I need to do? And I can't fault the game for that if it gave me 100 hours of wonderful joy with my friends.
But you should feel – the game should give you some sort of nod like, hey, good job, buddy. Like,
well,
and you could still –
I finished it on multiple difficulty levels.
But you still don't feel like you're done.
I don't want to be done. I'm enjoying the process of playing it. There's just nothing else to do.
Well, arguably you could play – is a different character with different groups and enjoy a different dynamic, but essentially it is going to be what it is. And you kind of have the, I'm the grizzled veteran who knows how these, you know, encounters will roll. And I know what my new role is, but now I got to play my new role and I got to gear to my new role and figure out my skills. But yeah, to a degree you may have gotten to that point. I mean, that is the deal with finite games as opposed to open-ended games, which is probably why you've started to shift gears into DayZ, which is what we will talk about when we come back on the other side of this break. We Can Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from We Can Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. All right. We are enjoying a great show as we head into this second segment. Definitely all fired up.
Yeah.
If people didn't already leave, I like it. We're enjoying a great show. The first 10 minutes of the show was like, Dwarfin. That was pretty much the...
You just became like the little animal that's on the desk in Zorn's office at Fifth Element. Like, got a chain in your throat. I'm sorry. Anyway, big thanks, of course, to our friends at Fireball Whiskey. Ignite the night with Fireball Whiskey. You can follow them on Twitter @Fireball Whiskey. That's whiskey with no E at the end, because that's the right way to spell it in English countries with no E's in their name.
No, all countries that don't have an E, they don't have to be, like in Japan, whiskey is spelled without the E, because but that's not an English country.
That is not exactly. All right. So the approved alternate spelling of whiskey with a KY and no E.
Every time you come on the show, Andrea, you have to have a new bar factoid.
Okay.
And it has to be now Andrea's bar factoid.
Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah.
I thought about starting a YouTube show for that.
And actually, it just cuts to you going, I don't need you or your face. And then it's just, yeah. That was Andrea's bar factoid.
Nice. So another time you might want to ignite the night would be when the zombies attack, because fire definitely
good
against zombies.
You do not want to be in the night at all when the zombies are attacking in DayZ.
Pretty bad scene. So first of all, for those who don't know, explain DayZ as a add-on for Arma 2.
DayZ is a beautiful flower. No. DayZ,
we already had the DayZ moment.
DayZ is a mod, a free mod for a not free game called Arma 2. That is a military, very, very precise, authentic, looking for realism, yes, military shooter. So the systems... What's happening?
I don't know. What are you doing?
It's just...
I'm listening to you, dude.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm here.
Garnet goes, okay, Jeff, start talking. Me and Andrea are going to fuck around.
I know.
<They're> like... In the background. All right.
Yeah, it was really...
It was his fault.
So, Jeff, this is for you.
Of course it's my
thanks,
fault.
Thanks, Jeff. And I'm also very interested in DayZ.
Yeah. So the simulation features of Arma 2 have been adapted into this zombie game, which is really an interesting take on the zombie video game, because we've never really seen a game that requires you to get supplies, survive, deal with your hunger level, your hydration level. It has a lot of really really complex things you have to keep track of. The first thing I should say for anybody that is curious about trying DayZ, none of you guys else, everybody else here has not played it, right?
I have not.
Okay.
No.
I've been told about a billion times, but I know I have not played
it. Well, it's unfortunate because the game is really not ready for prime time yet. Right. And you know, it's a beta, self-professed beta, and you can't really fault it for that. But it isn't – it's not ready for the masses. It's really clunky to install. I spent numerous hours trying to get into a game, having errors, having all kinds of things, needing to uninstall things, reinstall things. And it wasn't because of my PC. It's because the game's just – it's just not polished. It's a fan-made mod.
Now, on that note, the developers of Arma 2 have folded these guys into their group now. And,
yeah.
And Arma 3 will hopefully or ostensibly contain some sort of official DayZ.
Yeah, content. Which is a really exciting prospect because when the game – the potential of the game is incredible. And there are these moments where that peeks through and you see what this game could be, and it's like – this could be really something special.
So describe for me what one of those moments might be like.
Well, I'm going to get to that for a second because I kind of want to outline moving up to that because
it's your damn show.
So the thing about DayZ is that it has gone through a lot of iterations, and I haven't played it up till now, so I can only speak to it now because I understand it was a lot different very recently. But now what happens is when you load
How
it up,
do you mean?
Well, I'll explain. When you load it up now, you're plopped into this world that is enormous. It is an enormous map. And you're always sort of plunked in at a spawn point that is near one of the coasts. The one coast. But there's numerous points along that coast where you can spawn in. And you spawn in with almost nothing. You have no weapon. You have a flashlight, I believe, and a bandage and some painkillers. And a backpack. And you have to survive. And whatever time of day your server happens to be on is the time of day. And there are hundreds of zombies in this world all around. You see the stats on the right of how many zombies are still alive. And there's, up to 50 or so people that could possibly be on your server. But
So there's, may I ask a quick question?
Sure.
So is it run then in a way like a Minecraft server where there's a persistent server that's in existence?
Yes,
and
kind of.
You get the login IP of it, and then you log into it, and now you drop into that world, which was spawned at some point in time. So you enter in at any given point on the server clock, not necessarily at the beginning of a game.
Right.
Okay.
That's right, except it's much more difficult than Minecraft is. And it's old
only
school
that,
PC gaming.
Only that comparison point, I understand there's a lot of differences. I was just trying, from a framework standpoint, there's a server that someone started on a blade someplace, and you get the IP address for it, log into it, and once you're into it, it might have been running for 12 hours already, or it might have just started up, and you're dropped into that world, and things have been happening, and that's just it.
Yeah, you don't get the IP address. It's like old school PC gamer. You see like a list of available servers. But basically, that's not wrong. Yes, and then... So it's difficult. I mean, I set about playing it with Alex and Dan from the TRS, and it's very difficult. It shines when you play with other people, but it's very difficult to play with other people because you don't know where anyone is at any given time. You don't have a map when you start. You have to find a map. You have to find a compass if you can. So you enter this world at whatever place, and you arrive there near this coast, and you start walking around. The game has a series of indicators on the right-hand side. One of them is how loud you are being and how visible you are. Mm-hmm. And the game, a lot of the game I have come to discover is about managing those meters and being as undetectable as possible. It really, in a lot of ways, is a stealth game, but not a stealth game at all. But you have to use stealth in a way no game I know of has ever really employed it. Because... when one zombie finds you and is aware of you, you're fucked in a big way. They will never stop chasing you, almost. I mean, there are certain things you can do, but and there's fast zombies and slow zombies, and one can easily kill you. They will, if they hit you once, you start bleeding, and you need to deal with your bleeding. You have to bandage a wound or you will bleed out. And if you bleed out, you don't just die. You sort of pass out and your vision gets blurry. If you're low on blood, your vision's blurry and you just kind of have to wander around. You can break limbs and then your movement is impaired. It's very simulation-y, for lack of a better word. So having no weapon and having very few supplies, the game has a very steep learning curve because you sort of wander out. And if you play this game like you would approach any other video game that you've ever played, you will not have fun because there are three movement states to be in. You can either be walking, running, well, actually four, walking, running, crouched, or prone. But if you run in this game, you're pretty much going to die because they will hear you and see you. So that's the first thing you do is in any other video game. And when I loaded this game up, because there's obviously no tutorial, the first time you see a zombie and they see you, it's like, I'm running away from that zombie because that's what I do in video games. I run away from zombies. No, that's the worst thing you could possibly do because all the zombies will hear you and chase you and you will die. So it's about managing visibility and the fact that they can hear you or not.
Which, interestingly enough, does apply to Arma 2.
Right. I never really played Arma 2, but I understand that.
I played Arma, and so I have an understanding, you know, the basics of the Bohemia style game.
It definitely borrows all the mechanics from that game, but it just applies them in what is, for me, a much more interesting milieu.
So, just listening, and I want you to get back on track, so make yourself a little tick note. What worries me listening to this was the point you said about if you get seen, then once a zombie locks onto you, that your game changes face and there's no real way to get out of that state. And that concerns me because I think one of the things that would be cool would be to be able to defeat your way out of the local zombie problem and get back to a state of not detected.
Sure. Well, I mean, if you manage to gather supplies and survive as someone might actually do in a zombie outbreak, you can. And you can find weapons and you can kill zombies and you can protect yourself in certain ways and you can use the environment to your advantage in certain ways. These are all things that are along that steep learning curve because much like Minecraft and Dark Souls, which this game feels very reminiscent of for me, it's a game that does not hold your hand in any way. And That may all change when this is a more professional product. Right. But for now, it's all learned by making mistakes. And there's a lot of mistakes to be made. But where it shines and where the potential starts to peek through is these moments where it conveys better than any game I have ever experienced what it might actually be like to try to survive while there is a zombie outbreak. I was in a situation where Alex and I managed to find each other by the clunkiest way you can possibly do, by just killing ourselves and respawning and killing ourselves and respawning until we had visual markers and go, okay, I'm near the crane. Are you near the crane? Yes, I can see it in the distance. Okay, get to me. Follow the coastline. Very clunky, very unuser-friendly. But we did find each other. And then it was like, okay, we're crouched. You go slowly in this game. You can't go fast. I mean, you can crouch run, which is less visible and less loud than just pure sprinting. But for the most part, it's, okay, there's a house over that ridge. Do you want to try to get there? Yeah, okay. Okay, let's go. Okay, oh my God, there's a zombie to the left. There's a zombie to the left. Okay. Okay, and your pulse starts quickening because one zombie will fuck you up, man. So it's like a real situation when there's okay, there's something to the right. Okay, go prone.
Fuck, was a zombie.
Yeah. You go prone and then you're crawling. Okay, he doesn't see us. Okay, keep. Okay, hang around to the right, go around to the right, go into the back and we can crawl underneath this fence and go into the back. Okay, there's an open door that gets us into this barn. Let's walk into the barn. Is there anything there? Okay, there's a couple of empty soda cans on the ground that you could pick up if you want. No. Not okay. Is there anything else? There's a piece of wood. Okay, let's grab that piece of wood because if I break a bone, I'm going to need to use that piece of wood and a bandage to splint my arm or leg. So that's useful to have.
That's kind
of rad. Dude, so much of it is rad in potential, right? The systems are there. They're just so clunky because the inventory management system is the single worst inventory management system I've ever seen in a video game. It is counterintuitive and bizarre. I'll get to that in a second. So anyway, we're inside this cabin or this barn. Oh my God, there's a dead body. I can hear flies. So I know there's a dead, that means that there's a dead player's body. Someone died in here. Okay. Oh, there he is. Okay. Look inside his pack. Is there anything useful? Yeah, there's a couple bandages. Okay. Grab those. Awesome. There's a flare. Great. Let's keep the flare because at night we're going to need the flares to light our way. Awesome. Move around the side. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh, we found a gun. No bullets in it. Okay. Crap. Grab the gun.
Better just leave it here then.
Yeah. No, I'm like, that's a melee weapon.
There's a gun and a hatchet. Okay, there's a hatchet next to the gun. Oh, grab the hatchet. Okay, cool. All right. Well, I can't carry both the hatchet and the gun. All right. Well, we don't have any bullets in the gun. Okay, you carry the hatchet. I'll carry the gun. Okay, I'm going to lead. We can, you know, amazing feel. Okay, leave the barn. Oh, I can see a way that I can get across there. There's three zombies. Dude, there's a zombie on the right. Did you see the zombie on the right? Yeah, just get down. That kind of feeling.
I feel like I'm in Blair Witch or something.
It is amazing, okay? Amazing. There was a moment where Alex was across the way and we'd finally found each other and he got hit by a zombie and he was bleeding. And in order to get away from the zombie, he dove into the ocean and started swimming towards me. And I was on the side of the dock, like looking at him. And he was swimming towards me, bleeding out. And he was like trying to get to me. And the zombie was following him in the water, swimming after him. And he's like, I'm going to die. He gets right to the edge
but
of the water.
But zombies don't swim.
These do.
How do you know that?
These zombies crawl. I've never seen a swimming zombie. They do all kinds of crazy stuff. He gets to the edge of the water. I run down. I bandage him at the last second. He's woozy. He needs food and water. Like, we're scavenging. He's like, I can't see anything.
What happened to the zombie?
You're going to have to guide me. The zombie turned around and swam a different direction. Sometimes they glitch out, which is you can take advantage of. So the game is very buggy also.
Or I got bored. It's just a zombie.
Or I got bored. Yeah.
Taste your brain somewhere else.
But, you know, we have to like go and look for supplies. We have to find things. Oh, I found a piece of barbed wire. Okay, we can set up a little fence right here and try to impede their. It is incredibly evocative of what it might be like to try to survive and find things. And, oh, my God, I found a better gun. Oh, my. It's thrilling to find a better gun or just a knife. Oh, it's just a hunting knife. Okay, well, we can use it to kill that sheep and make food for ourselves because we're going to need to survive the night. It sucks that you have to literally watch like YouTube tutorials to figure out how to open something in your inventory and know that
what?
Like if something's in your backpack, you can't use it because it's in your backpack.
Okay.
You have to take it out and put it on your utility belt.
Which is a whole other step.
Which is a whole other step. Silly.
If you find somebody, you loot them, it's
in service to the simulation of it.
But
is there something in your backpack? Like you can, it takes 2 seconds. Like, I mean,
maybe it doesn't.
The hundreds of cons I've done, your phone or your microphone or whatever, your notebook is in your backpack. You can get that out in less than 10 seconds. Like,
and it has this whole menu system where there's numbers on the left and numbers on the right. And if you click a number front, like numbers on the left are potential items that you can have. And the number on the right is the actual items that you have. And everything is counterintuitive and clunky and stupid. And the animations are clunky. And I mean, the game looks really pretty. And the world is enormous and has lots of interesting features to it. It just is such a bear to get working right, to get in a game with your friend, to find your friend once you're in that game, then to figure out how the hell to survive. But once you get past all that stuff, like, I really want someone to make this game.
Does it?
Right. Because it's so incredibly pulse-pounding. I've never felt quite like that playing a game before.
And on that note, does it in any way explore the idea that some, you know, of the later zombie narratives have of trying to blend in with zombies, whether it be like...
No, I would love to do that. I would love to, like, be able to mimic... I mean,
like, do you try and mimic, or do you, like, have to, you know, like, remember, of course, Walking Dead, you had to, like, cover yourself with meat and blood or whatever.
Yeah,
to
be gut, like, suit.
Yeah. Gut suit. I mean, to cover the spell. I think like, really any of those ideas...
The potential is there for all that stuff to be built into a game system like this. And right now there's a lot of crap where like, oh, if that worked, I would be so happy because it's a cool idea, but it's just not robust enough.
So
to
for right
that.
Now, it's essentially a sandbox into which you are dropped.
Right.
And the objective is survive. How long can you stay alive?
But you can also get to this state, which I have not yet, but you can elevate yourself to the way I understand it. You can elevate yourself to sort of this bandit level where you have so much cool crap and you're so awesome that you can start hunting zombies. You can start hunting people. So there's like this PvP level of like people in the big cities. Like,
There
are cities.
Did you go to any of them?
Airplane hangars. There's islands. It's enormous.
Did you go to any of the cities?
Yeah, but I'm so ill prepared for that I was killed pretty fast.
By zombies or by people?
By zombies. But I know that there's people there potentially. It's a whole like living, breathing world.
I mean, is there server. So there's no servers are infinite.
No, I mean, they get shut off and turned back on. And,
but theoretically, they're infinite and they run and run. So
yeah, you get a save state.
So are
like,
there
if you log out.
Are there societies that then develop within the server?
I think that's the goal. And I haven't experienced that firsthand yet.
Okay,
but
that kind of blew my mind. That I love that idea.
It sounds like the game The Walking Dead should have been. It sounds really similar to kind of like the narrative of that storyline. I mean, obviously, you know, we're going to talk about the Telltale game later, but that to me sounds like The Walking Dead. Like you have to survive. You don't have anything.
But even better, the idea of these desperate factions starting to form amongst survivors and being able to persist on the server, but still being, you know, still facing some degree of jeopardy at all times. That's cool.
It is really cool. It it's not there yet. You know what I mean? And it's really not even close to being there.
It's still, you know, I mean, they're right. Building it as we speak. Like, they're constantly trying to add stuff to it and you know.
Yeah. And I'm rooting for it. I want this game.
Well, that,
badly.
You know,
I
you
think
know, when they,
it's
when,
awesome.
When they dropped the mod, the Arma 2 sales, like, tripled or some crazy.
No, it was
like
1,000%.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was something ridiculous. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, obviously, it's probably one of the best potential sort of ideas that they've.
And there's a lot of people playing it. There's a lot of people playing it all the time. And which is, I mean, it's a testament to the PC gaming community where people are sort of, you know, they'll hack their way, you know, they'll cobble together a gaming experience for themselves, whereas console gamers, I think, are less inclined to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still surprising to me what people are willing to put up with to have this experience, because it is a very frustrating experience just getting the game working at all. I had a lot of errors. I mean, I was on for hours just.
But it sounds like you don't.
And guys,
before
you start trolling Jeff, he's not John Davison. He knows how to run a computer game. So
yeah. I mean, I definitely. I wasn't. I didn't. do any reading about DayZ before starting this experience, so I was learning as I went.
Yeah.
But
and ARMA made itself open and moddable. However, we've seen the sort of evolution of that world through Steamworks and through, you know, games like the open sets for Civilization.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, we've sort of come to almost expect click and load, you know, StarCraft II mods. We expected, oh, it's a mod. I just click a button and load it up. It, like, automatically loads all the assets and everything, like, takes care of itself. Whereas ARMA's a little more still of the old Wild West formula of you got to go get all these packages and get them put together and assemble. But what you do, the payoff is there.
Yeah. I mean, it's still like there's numerous times where I'm trying to find a low-ping server and I get into one and it just the game just hangs or... I mean, in a
That's technical glitches. That'll happen. Yeah. That's not big.
Well, so, Jeff, did you play any ARMA 2?
I've never played ARMA 2 and still...
So you have ARMA 2 now, but you still haven't played it.
I haven't played it.
Well, By the way, how much is ARMA 2 for those who are interested?
$30.
So ARMA 2 is $30. Did you purchase it digitally?
I did on Steam,
Off Steam. So you get ARMA 2 off Steam. Oh, so it's interesting. So is DayZ like a click Steam instant?
No, in fact, from what I understand, and I'm sure viewers will correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I understand, complicated matters further by purchasing it through Steam because it doesn't handshake with Steam very well. So
you're probably better off buying it through another
independently
and getting your ARMA 2 that way.
Just one more ARMA 2 related thing while we're talking about it. If you guys haven't seen, I mean, I know you've seen it, Garnet, but the and I don't know if maybe you talked about it on the previous show.
Shack Tactical?
Yes.
We did.
Okay. Yeah, awesome.
And by the way, if you haven't seen Shack Tactical, we did a couple of community insights on Shack News about Shack Tactical, which is a group that originated years ago on Shack News. They've since grown to
their own thing.
And it's quite an impressive display they put on. But did you see that at all?
No, I haven't.
So they use ARMA 2 and all of its simulation bases to do a very high-level war game simulation with squad level and then battalion level and regiment level command structure.
Yeah, like 90 plus players against AI. Like
I
90
doubt it.
Doing formations
it's
and
awesome.
Doing all.
It's awesome. So I'm just good. Less interested in
and a real command
the,
and control structure.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just less interested in the military stuff than I am with like this feeling of being a survivor in this desolate landscape. It's awesome.
If you see this though, it and it's not a zombie survival thing, but it's very much like a wow. If I had the time to put in to be part of a virtual, you know, battalion or whatever, this is the fucking way to do it.
What stands out to me about this is the differentiation between this and a Left 4 Dead. And Left 4 Dead is still an action game.
Definitely.
And I think that what I hear in the way you describe it, when you describe, I mean, you even switched into dramatic voice when you were talking about these things. And it's the same thing, and we're not, I promise, we're not going to go into Spec Ops, but it's the same problem that in a way Spec Ops had with narrative delivery, wherein you can't just be pulling the trigger and expect to build up any sort of tension and expect to build up any sort of drama, because you've got to have some differentiation. You've got to have the downtime that allows us to have our psyches start to work, play tricks on us.
Yeah. Alex would say things to me. We were as close to role-playing a zombie outbreak as I've ever experienced.
And you never even thought. I mean, probably
he would say things
thinking
like,
of it.
He's like, I'm going to scream in a second, so I'm going to apologize to you in advance. There's a zombie right there, and I know he's going to turn, and I know he's going to run at me. And I kept thinking, like, how amazing would it be if they built in voice communication to the game, and you had to, like, whisper... Or they could hear you.
You mean Manhunt?
You know? Yeah, Manhunt, exactly. Because I found myself whispering. I'd be like, okay, there's a... Because you're worried about creating sound. You're worried about... Like, if you walk on a different surface, it's louder than a different surface. And it is so incredibly pulse-pounding. I mean, I felt like... Because these guys are a real threat. They're a real danger. They can kill you easily. Mm-hmm. So you have to be smart. And you have to be tactical. And you have to take each encounter... And you almost always don't want to kill anything because shooting a gun is really loud and it'll bring more zombies to the party.
And I'd argue that the scariest games out there are the ones that make you feel weak.
Yeah.
Or that actually make you weak so that you're like, nope, I'm not – this isn't going to be headshot town. You know,
right.
This is going to be like me running away a lot or, you know, me hiding in this bush over here while shit calms down.
And I don't like those experiences. I don't like that feeling of helplessness. I like the super – human, overpowered feeling that video games give you, that allow you to be something more than you are in reality. If I wanted to feel weak and underpowered, I'd just like walk around in my daily life. You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
you know,
but I am a superhero in reality.
I don't need that simulated
experience.
You're
not weak and underpowered.
If it was a zombie apocalypse, like my odds of survival on my own, if I was out in the wilderness by myself, are pretty slim.
You'd go all Day of the Comet on them. Oh,
I don't even know what that means. That's okay.
Well, you bring up an interesting point, Andrea, because you know, I'm talking about this game in with reverence, but I want to keep reinforcing the fact that this is like these are little blips of amazing moments amidst a lot of. I died again. There's no weapons. I have nothing. I just searched a whole town. There was nothing in it. I have nothing. Well, he found me. I'm dead. You know, so the game isn't there yet. It's just in these glimpses of what it could be. Mm-hmm. There's a really, really revolutionary game waiting to happen. You know?
Well, I think that as a sort of, you know, side tangent to this, this is also what folks were really hopeful would find in some sort of post-apocalyptic MMO a la a, you know, true Fallout MMO. And I think that what would be interesting in differentiating the post-apocalyptic world is that you think that there's a little more structure to society. And while there might be mutants out there, there maybe are some more structured factions and more, you know, upstart societies and more ability to explore all these interesting, you know, conceptual ideas of what would society be like if it was utopian? What would society be like if it was completely totalitarian? Mm-hmm. What would society be like if it was run by a benevolent dictator or a malicious dictator or, you know, some sort of weird collective? And you could see all these ideas because people love to talk about politics and social systems. And mm-hmm. I think it would be really interesting to see something explored at that scale, which is what people, I think, wanted to see in that or a wasteland or.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah.
I would get excited about that. And this is also very interesting. I think the thing that's disruptive about to the idea, but also something that people really latch on to with zombie stuff is zombie is just like, it's like apocalypse gone a step further, because while you have this horrible, whatever it might have been, cataclysmic event, whether it's nuclear war or a comet striking the earth or, you know, a giant earthquake or whatever, whatever the apocalypse form takes, you have like that moment in time that
Staple
it happened.
Marshmallow Man.
Staple Marshmallow Man. But you have that moment in time that it happened, and then you're into like a recovery phase. Whereas if it's zombies, it's like there is no recovery phase, because basically if you have blood in your veins, you are fucked.
Yeah.
Ultimately, you are fucked. You're probably not going to have kids. You're not going to raise them. There's not going to be any new society. There is not much hope for the future. You're not going to raise crops. You're not going to have any technology. You're not going to have schools. You're just going to maybe survive until one day a zombie eats your face.
But isn't it interesting how as games have gotten so much more polished, and I don't even mean polished from a sort of aesthetic sense. I mean it from an experiential sense where I'm ushered into an experience and everything is sort of, you know, I don't want to use the word hand holding, but that is the kind of the sense I'm talking about, is that as games become streamlined and they give me an experience in a very specific way and I'm guided down a specific path and taught how to play the game, all that, there are these indie experiences, these blips that keep popping up, where people are sort of clamoring for an antidote to that a little bit, the Minecraft and Dark Souls and this game. And I think there's going to be more and more of these where part of the game is figuring it out. And part of the game is, you know, I think what people like about it is that I figured out how to play it. If you figured out how to play it, you're one of me. You know, you're in my group.
Right.
Because we took the time, we took the effort, we were patient, we made it through those trials, and we came out the other side, and now we've found this really interesting experience because of what we went through to get there. And also these all three of these games too, I feel like it's sort of the fun is what you make of it. It's your stories that are happening inside this world that you're in, you know,
very clear difference
together.
There. Very clear yeah. difference. Well, as we stumble around those ideas and try to figure things out, we have a couple of points from you guys in the official thread last week that when we come back, we will talk about. One of them being Anatari 165 thinks that they have cracked the formula for what makes a great narrative game. And when we come back, we'll kick off with that. Very happy summertime sounds there, as
Andrea
you might hear.
Providing
thanks very
her
much.
Own vocal tracks.
I know.
That's what I'm she says sorry. All the time. I apologize.
That's all right. Again,
do you want to do it again? Should we
no,
do it again?
Not at all.
Take two.
Thanks to again to our good friends at Fireball Whiskey, oh, who yeah. Love obviously the Weekend Confirm crew. Thanks very much, guys.
Yeah, I'm so Muchas not gracias. Thirsty because of you. Thank you.
So I was going to move us along that. As you guys bump the table.
Go ahead.
I was going to move us along, and yet. What's it speaks a lot to DayZ's power that we talked right through the break about this game. Mm-hmm. And Jeff brought up a point about society development and the way Eve works, and then I wanted him to lay that down because then I want to tell you what I want to have in this game.
Oh yeah, no, I was just saying that I think, although I don't necessarily think they'll go this way because it's harder to reach a large audience, but I think allowing the way Eve does to allow other factions and their own political climates and their own, you know, sort of likes and dislikes sort of develop organically within the community would be really awesome in a post-apocalyptic zombie game.
For sure.
You know, factions that are allied with each other, that are against each other. So it's not just humanity versus zombies. It's humanity versus, you know, more realistic, I guess.
Yeah, there's no indication of that. And my worry about it is that under the auspices of a more mainstream game, that they might go more back to, hey, we need to give you 30 seconds of shooting every 30 seconds. But I will say, from what I understand, and again, I could be wrong because I'm sort of late to the party on this, you used to start the game with a gun, and they took that out.
Right.
So that's a great indicator of where their headspace is, because the fact just finding a weapon in this game is one of the most thrilling moments.
Right.
Because it's like, oh my God, there's a lifeline here. It's crazy.
Yeah, so that's really cool.
I felt the same way with the Zombie U. Did you guys get extensive hands-on with Zombie U at E3?
Did
you guys talk? Have you talked about it at all?
Not really.
No,
go ahead.
Before you switch gears into something else, can
yes.
I say, like, here's what I want out of DayZ. So we all enjoyed Last of Us, and I think there's a very cool idea of guided narrative. And obviously, because it is guided, you're taking the approach that these other factions are hostiles, right? However, when you're in an open world, it suddenly presents all these avenues of who do you ally with, who do you not ally with, how are the factions developing? And I would love, and I don't know exactly what it looks like, but I would love it if this game or a game could evolve to the point where when I started off on a server and I had no weapon and I was on my own, if I could stumble someplace into civilization, that I could come up to some sort of barricade, outpost, whatever it might be, and have that moment you see in books and in movies where you're confronted suddenly by that survivor group and they've got you at gunpoint. They've got that gun to the temple of your head and you don't know whether they're friend or foe. You don't know whether you have to decide, do I fight these guys? Do I try and deal with them? And then if I have a conversation with them, are they good guys? Are they bad guys? Where do they fall in the world? And have all those shades and have it all be Eve-like, player-driven. None of it prescripted to where what faction you – well, you know what? You came into Stockton, and Stockton is being run by this faction, and this faction behaves like this. But you may have run into an outlier faction that's actually in a beef with the faction that's running Stock – like, and right. at the same time, zombie threat at the same time. That would be amazing.
Yeah, organic again, drama would be awesome.
Lest there be
it doesn't do that fusion, right now.
It's nowhere even remote.
No, no.
I mean, it's a big
but wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah. Yeah.
From the wouldn't that be cool file, that would be pretty cool. I would play that game tape.
I agree.
But Zombie U probably doesn't do that either.
Nice segue.
But it makes your face into a zombie face.
It's awesome.
It was a terrible segue, but did you guys have you guys gotten any hands-on time with it?
Anybody? Barely.
I saw anybody? It. Just at E3 slightly for a second.
Well, I had the privilege of going to a Nintendo press event in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago and got an extensive, like, 25-30-minute hands-on demo with it. And I was actually really impressed by what I saw. I think it's going to be one of the kind of flagship titles for, like, the launch of the Wii U. Of course, they're not talking about
competition there.
I know, exactly. They're not talking about one of my bigger beefs with Nintendo and the Wii U, but we won't talk about their lack of a launch lineup yet. In this moment, we're talking about Zombie U from Ubisoft, which I thought...
Which you thought was a good launch title.
Yeah, no. If it is going to be a launch title, but that's up for debate. The game itself was really engaging, really immersive, and it had that same thing that you were talking about where there was this really exciting moment when you found a new item. Like, I found a shotgun versus my hand pistol, which only has 2 bullets left. Now I have 8 bullets or 8 shells in my shotgun. Or, you know, finding, you know, like a baseball bat versus finding, you know, a bandage. Obviously, you need both of those things. And it also has that kind of thrilling aspect where if you get, if you're attacked by a zombie, if you get one bite, you're dead. Your character is instantly dead in the game, and then you respawn as a new character, and as you progress through the world, you can find the character you used to be, which is now a zombie, and if you kill...
Oh, it's Hunger Games.
Yeah, if you kill that zombie, you can take all of the equipment that was in your backpack before, because when you respawn, you don't have any of the stuff that you had before, because it's still in the backpack of your former, now zombie self.
Just mostly dead.
Yes, mostly dead. So I thought that was a really interesting kind of take on it, which, you know, was reminiscent of what you were talking about with DayZ. This, like, you feel helpless, you don't have anything. And also, if the zombies hear you or see you, you don't necessarily need to engage. In fact, you probably shouldn't engage most zombies. Like, if you see a zombie in the distance and they're kind of like a slow, staggering zombie, you should probably just, like, let them go.
Yeah.
But when you access your inventory, it's all in real time. Meaning, if you go to your inventory to pull out, you know, to more ammo to re-up your gun, you're not pausing the game. Yeah. The zombies that are coming after you are still coming towards you.
Do you like that?
No, it makes me scary. Like, I don't like it either. I like the pause time, but it gives
but even
you kind
scarier
of that...
not.
I mean, I liked it in Dead Space. But I never found myself in the middle of combat going, oh, I have to switch my gun. It was like, if I fucked up, I was like, oh man, I didn't prep for this fight very well.
Problem is, even if I have like the crazy futuristic, you know, custom-made, sawed-off shotgun backpack strap thing. Me reaching over my shoulder and I'm doing it right now. Reaching over my shoulder and grabbing, you know, the sawed-off back end of a shotgun and flipping it down in front
of
me.
Put that down, Garnett.
Like, why would he bring that in?
He's pointing at it.
Why would he bring that in? Really,
I don't think that I can do that motion as quickly with any sort of, you know, controller interface, and I sure as hell can't go connect shotgun.
But this is on the Wii U, so you're not doing it on the Wii U. You actually have to hold up the gamepad and swipe up to access your backpack.
Yeah,
and
that's what I'm saying.
Screen.
Is it still not going to? It's not going to.
I will say that the interface was a little frustrating at certain points, and I don't know if that's just because I have long nails and like it was difficult for me on the touchscreen, or if it was just like the interface just was.
Sorry.
Whoa.
That should be off.
Prince in the house.
Good. He named that tune in one note.
One screech, if you will.
I don't know if it was an interface problem or was a user error problem. So I'm going to go with user error because I haven't tried it a second time to be able to find out if it was just me or if it was the game.
I love what you're talking about with the inventory stuff. And I think the most exciting thing for DayZ, and I'm curious if Zombie, you will have this as well, is that it's not just about finding a new weapon. You know, it's about finding survival items. And it's got a little hint of that Minecrafty thing where I can combine things and create stuff and build, fortify, and all that stuff, I think, adds such a level of creativity to the game
MMO
exciting.
In that space would work so very well.
Yeah.
Because,
the MMO?
Yeah. I really
because
think
an,
so.
I think an MMO
or a Guild Wars like instance sort of adventure game, but anything that has a persistent world. Because so far in fantasy worlds, we haven't been especially able to crack the idea of why is crafting cool beyond I can make really great gear. But here it would be an instance of crafting would be like if you were a
it's like Dead Island.
It's similar to Dead Island. If you were a underground weapons manufacturer running around, or not running around, but staying, you know, like under the radar of the zombies in a DayZ server, you would be incredibly cool and incredibly powerful within that game world.
Yeah.
You know?
But there isn't even any MMO that works like that in any other game world.
I know there's not, but it's a cool idea.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, this is about cool ideas here. This is the happy, fun time, cool idea zombie show.
But, yeah. I mean, that's my bigger issue with MMOs in general is that none of them embraces that. I feel like
Eve does.
I think that's
a big part of the love for Eve.
But I feel like a lot of most mainstream MMOs, there was this experimentation phase in the early part of MMOs where it was like, yeah, it's a real world where people can just, you know, be a tailor.
Click on whatever they want.
Yeah. And then WoW came out and sort of was like, no, it's, you know, it's a very, everybody is the greatest hero in the world and it's all about loots. And I love WoW, I'm not dissing it, but it sort of just changed the tide so drastically that there really isn't any more of that fun, interesting
side. Speaking of Eve, did I send you the Dust code?
You did. I have not, but I'm going to do that. Yes.
So flashing back to Wii U, so you got to play Zombie U, which ostensibly is one of the, like, you know, the flagship titles right now for serious games on Wii U. Mm-hmm. Overall, like, how did you feel about what, like, obviously it looks of at least current, if not a little bit beyond generation, as far as, you know, presentation quality and all those sorts of things. How was the interface as far as playing it, other than the, you know, the inconsistency with inventory management on the touchscreen? Did you like it? What did you think of the game overall? What did you think of that and the what it says about Wii U as a gaming console?
Jeff, do you remember when we were talking about Child of Eden and you said you got Kinect elbow?
Yeah.
I got, like, these muscle pains in my upper arms from holding the Wii U gamepad.
It's not that heavy, either.
It's not, but when you hold it in an upright position for 2+ hours at a time, like, you feel it in your biceps and your upper arms.
You need to do more pull-downs.
Well, you need to be on the Wii Balance Board, perhaps.
Well, perhaps that's also true.
Or perhaps
but
not.
When it's an integral part of the game where you can't put the gamepad down, you have to be holding it up in front of you.
Which game is this you're talking about?
Zombie U. That, to me, signifies short gameplay experiences. What we talked about with the Kinect a couple of times, where you can play the Kinect for maybe a couple hours at a go before you just get, your body just gets tired. Even
you know
if you're
really
a physically fit person, you don't want to be jumping around and moving around and being active for more than a couple hours at a go.
Really good for that is mini games.
Yeah, right?
Oh, yeah.
Raving Rabbids,
yeah,
my
that's,
friends.
Yeah, that's doing too really well. Yeah.
So that to me is a big hurdle that they need to figure out, because there's like a scanning mode that you can tap by hitting like one of the bumpers.
That certainly seems
that will
to
help
be
you scan things in the environment.
We also saw that in Batman. It seems to be one of the first things that designers have immediately jumped on is, oh, look, I have this screen. I can use it as a scanner.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, and
just
I
like
think
real
that
life scanning.
It's a novelty, but you, after the first couple of times, it almost becomes like you forget about using it because it's like one of these things like, oh, do I really need that in the environment? But I...
this is not selling me on
no,
this
I'm not
tech.
Trying to not sell you. I just like it's... These are first impressions, right? This is just one gameplay experience that I've had with this game. I do think that they've integrated the gamepad well in that sense, but you have
but
to
if you
kind
were
of
playing
yourself,
Zombie U on a normal controller on a PS3...
Dude, I'm a gamer that can sit on my couch for 9 hours at a go and play the same game. And you can't do that.
That's probably why your
that.
Shoulders get fatigued.
I know, exactly. They're soft, okay? They're soft shoulders. You have that muscle fatigue, you know? It's like, you do. It just happens. Like, no one wants to hold. I don't care if it's 2 pounds or 5 pounds. You don't want to hold anything in the same position in the air for 4 hours at a time.
So what you're saying basically is it's Wii U controller planks.
It's like doing planks.
Yes.
Doing planks. Yes.
They integrate the touchpad and all these cool features into it really well, but you kind of got to go, is it towing the line of being gimmicky, or does it really enhance the gameplay experience? So and right now, I'm on the fence. I'm not sure if it does. I think at first it goes, oh, wow, this is really cool. Mm-hmm. And then 3 hours in, is it annoying that I have to keep doing it, or is it still cool
and you only
that
played
I get
for
to 25
minutes,
it?
You said.
I know.
That does not bode well.
It does. And here's the other thing, is disarmed of whatever advantage the controller might give it, that then puts the Wii U into where do we rank it with the other consoles of the day. So, for instance, today we're saying, yeah, it's essentially of a caliber of a PS3, maybe slightly advanced on a 360. But where does that make it stack up with whatever's coming next? Because we know, look, something has to be coming next, whether it's Xbox 8 or whatever else, who knows. Right. Then those have to be coming.
I think the clear answer is behind those things.
And how much does that matter? So, Iwata was addressing the Nintendo shareholders earlier this week and explained that it's not a big deal. That they feel, that Nintendo feels that
it would be funnier if you came out and he was like, this is a big deal. We did not see this coming. Oh, Jesus. Oh, God.
Please,
this is a huge
machine.
Deal.
Please.
A couple of interesting points here are, number one, he does make an admission by doing so that the Wii was way off of where we are today. I mean, obviously, we've been all saying that for a long time, but this is Nintendo's boss saying, hey, yeah, well, you know what? We're going to admit that it's pretty far off from 360 and PS3. But he then goes on to talk about how he doesn't think that wherever those new consoles go, that the delta between that and the Wii U will be as great. He said specifically, other companies might launch a next-gen console with more power, but we don't necessarily think that the difference between the Wii U and such console will be as drastic as what you felt it was between the Wii and other consoles, because there will be fewer and fewer differentiators in graphics. And I would say,
well,
is graphics the only factor?
H-dizzle.
H-dizzle, and that's one of the big deals. And so what we're potentially overlooking here is that displays, look, we might get better technologies within the parameter of what the display tech is today, but we're not going past 1080p for a long while, because it took forever for us to jump from SD boxes to HD, and there's all the back-end stuff. There's all the broadcast technology and the transmission technology, and it'll be another quantum jump when we go up. And
4K. I'm ready for 4K.
OLED, my friends.
But OLED is going to look great, but it's still going to be 1080p.
No,
it's still going to be 1080p.
You're not wrong.
So the problem was the Wii U's maximum output was 480p. So the only thing to do was a progressive rescreened 480 resolution screen.
Yeah.
Now, if you've seen Dolphin Pics, you
know that the Wii, if it only just outputted to a higher resolution, it would have not felt nearly as antiquated as it does.
This is true.
And because you see, I mean, if you look at Skyward Sword on the Dolphin, it's pretty. It's pretty.
If it could do 1920, 1080p, everyone would be happy.
Right.
And so that's what he's saying.
But
I think what he's saying here is that our new machine will have a proper HDMI 1920 1080p output on it, and by virtue of being at that resolution, you won't notice a difference.
I think that's a nice
bullshit
world
or not? You be
it's
the judge.
Bullshit. It's total bullshit. Bullshit.
Well, I mean, from what I understand, the real bottleneck at this point is RAM, and if these new systems are going to have much wider bottleneck of RAM, and you're going to have things like fewer load times, shorter load times, more robust, and higher res textures.
That bottleneck's a moving target, though, because keep in mind, it is always changing. Like, is it more RAM, or is it a faster pathway to the RAM? Or is it a wider pathway to the RAM so we can get more data transferred in and out at the same time? Or is it that we can't process all of it fast enough so we need to move the processor up? It's always a dynamic target.
True. Not wrong. But and I do think there's some truth to what he says as well, in the sense that crispness, as opposed to blurriness and jagginess, will go a long way to not feel so, at least for me, that's really the big problem that I have, is like, oh my God, it's just so blurry and jagged.
See, I think the problem for me is actually, I think that is an interesting discussion. I think that it's sort of smoke and mirrors from what I think the real lesson that Nintendo learned last generation, which was that if you have an attractive gimmick that you can sell, and you can sell a hojillion consoles with it, you don't need...
And you can sell them cheaply.
And you can sell them cheaply.
And still make money on them and not give away money when you sell them.
You don't need to worry about stuff like software as
much. But no, this time they have they have to worry about software.
I want him to explain that point. How do you mean you don't have to worry about software? Because I could make an argument that they sold Wii's as the Wii Sports player.
Well, yeah, but once
that was beyond the software,
Wii,
it was about
beyond Wii Sport. I'm just saying.
I could say the reason it sold wasn't that the Wii was that great. It was that the Wii Sports software experience was so fantastic that it was worth $250.
And
to
that's
you.
What he covered in the, when he said gimmick.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like that was the one trick pony of the Wii. Yeah. Is it had some motion control games. Beyond that, you compare it to the other consoles. It's really not all that exciting.
Right, you're not buying a Wii to play Call of Duty. You know what I mean?
Oh, no.
And I think that's been the biggest gap for Nintendo with the Wii is that there is no third-party lineup. And they're trying to kind of recoup that with the Wii U, announcing games, you know, like Batman coming out on the Wii and a number of other, you know, big third-party games. But I think that the problem is the tech that they're announcing is tech that's already available. I mean, we're seeing Sony do some really incredible and very similar stuff between the Vita and the PS3. I mean, that's out already. It's available now. So, I mean, what's the draw? What's the hook for the consumer to buy a Wii U if they already have those hardwares?
Well, did you guys see Pikmin 3?
I did.
E3?
Oh, it looks
and it definitely looks a notch above where we are on PS3 or 360 right now. Just I thought so.
I think it does. It looks fantastic.
It looks good.
I got to play it at that Nintendo event that I was at.
It was, dude. It's impressive.
But I mean,
the water alone is
there's water. That's nice water on.
But if you're not a diehard Nintendo fan, that's what I said after I left that press event. I said this console is for diehard Nintendo franchise fans. If you aren't a Pikmin fan, a Zelda fan, a Mario fan, then you don't need this system, hands down.
It's the same thing that Little King Story ran into. It's like other games did do interesting things with the Wii, but at that point they became so core games that they weren't of the same broadcast ability of a Wii Sports. So Wii Sports, everyone gets Frisbee, everyone gets golf, everyone gets bowling, it's fun, you can do all that. And then you had other great games. I mean, I mentioned it. Little King Story was – I loved that game, and it was really a fun game to play with Wii controls, but I completely copped to the fact that it's a gamer's game. Like, it wasn't a game that you were going to sell to everybody in the country. Now, I think it should have sold more than it did, but it wasn't a game you were going to sell to everybody in the country.
Well, and that I think, you know, speaks directly to Nintendo's problem with those kind of things is that they don't know how to sell that stuff.
But would you buy Call of Duty this fall for the Wii U if it looks best of all three of the available systems on Wii U? See, that's
not with that Nintendo
be a
friend code system.
Well, what if it's better? So in that same address, Iwata said that for the time being, basic online services will be free.
Xbox Live.
Yeah.
That's the
key. Why do you buy Call of Duty? You play it with your friends.
Yeah, it may look marginally prettier on the Wii U, but
let me give you the argument.
Online implementation is clunky and weird, and I have to jump through hoops.
You don't think Nintendo can pull off a great online service?
I just don't think they haven't yet. I don't think they can pull off the install base they need to get Call of Duty to float. You know,
Boy, you're adding facetious to facetious.
I do like that they have come forward and said we're going to offer this Pro controller as an option. They have to do that. I mean, it looks strikingly like the Xbox 360 controller, but
why not?
I mean, they have to have that for their hardcore gamer if they're going to be pushing.
I don't think hardcore. You know that I am a campaigner for the stop the bullshit about controllers being the reason people don't play games, because controllers are really not that hard to figure out. They really are not the core problem that people have with games. So let me give you real quickly before we blast out of here the Shaq responses that we got on this thread. Adam519 said, "Yep, I'm pretty damn amazed at how good new console games look as they come out now. If the Wii U can take that and improve on it even a bit, I feel like that will suffice for the majority of the user base." So he's making the argument that 1080p is 1080p. How much will the end user really notice the difference? Again, the argument I was making, it's been a while. What if Call of Duty is big? We're still probably a year and a half away from PS3 next and Xbox 8.
Sure.
Minimum, yeah.
So over that time.
I like how you have no idea what the PS3 successor could be called.
PS
Four.
What was it? The Orvis or the, what was it?
It's going to be the PS4.
It's going to be the PS4, obviously. Yeah. Whatever. Anyway, during that ensuing time, that does give the Wii U a pretty long window of being, you know, arguably the top dog in all regards.
It all comes down to their online hub. I mean, I think, you know, you guys, when you're talking about Xbox Live, that's going to be the differentiator. That's why I play more on my Xbox 360 than my PlayStation 3 is because I have more friends on Xbox Live than on PlayStation or PlayStation Plus. And it's going to be the big hurdle for Nintendo. I have nobody on my Wii. Not to mention, I haven't turned on my Wii in over 6 months because there just has not been a major game release for it.
If you want to play shooters,
you just got a lot of people mad. By the way, they're like,
why?
They're quoting they're writing in thread right now all the major games that have come out in the last 6 months.
A AAA title for Nintendo Wii.
Let me go there.
Okay. Oh, no, you're saying there's going to be a thread. I want to know what the thread's going to be about.
They will be upset because they will be talking about games that you could be playing on your Wii U if you were playing them.
Of course, there are games that are coming out, but I mean...
So the counter argument from the Shackers that was very prominent was Unreal Engine 4.
Right.
And that's going to be a big deal.
Well, I also want to say...
NDX 11.
I also want to say that if you are playing shooters and you're concerned about having it look better than... You're not going to run out and buy a Wii U. You're going to play on your PC.
Yeah.
Really?
No.
Yeah.
No, I don't think
what?
So.
If you're,
I think there's a core PC crowd that still believes that. But I think that time has changed.
If any given PC game now looks better than any given console.
If graphics were to use your number one thing.
I absolutely agree that by far the PC has the best visual experience. But I'm saying if you're a console gamer, which a lot of younger gamers now are almost exclusively console gamers, if you're that guy who has only had an Xbox, you're not going to go out and buy a PC to get a better visual experience for Battlefield.
Simply if you have the 55-inch television in your living room with the home theater set up on it and the Xbox and the PS3 connected to it, you've become a Xbox and PS3 shooter.
Right, so you're gonna run out and buy a Wii U because it's gonna I don't buy
absolutely
that.
No, that's exactly the person who would. The person who's invested all that money in that home theater, and you're gonna if I tell you, you know what, Jeff, it's gonna look a little bit better on the Wii U. You're the guy who who's bought three or
not,
four.
I'm not
HD
buying the Kool Aid either.
I'm just saying it's possible.
It absolutely is possible, but I don't think that's going to be the case for the majority of consumers.
And there's nothing about the design of that system that screams
sexy.
Right.
Nothing.
Well, when they market it and they show it and games look better on it, then
the black version does look cooler than the white version.
What games, though? I don't want to play Batman Arkham City.
Yeah, does Batman Arkham City look better on the Wii U?
That's just showing that they have those old games. Going forward, until the new system comes out, they will be the most powerful Unreal Engine 3 game.
Listen,
out
you
there.
And I both know that the marketing for the system is going to be a dude in his living room standing on the Wii balance board playing golf with the fucking thing on the floor in front of him. And he's going to be in bright clothes and it's all going to be really well lit. And his wife is going to be so happy that she can play the thing on her own screen. That's what the marketing is going to be. It's not going to be, gee whiz, look at the you know, there's three extra pixels.
I don't think they need to market the three extra pixels because those people will pick up on if it's there. But I think that it also plays into the argument that the DirectX 11 support and Unreal Engine 4 support of potential future boxes from Microsoft and Sony
and the only,
gives them an edge.
You're making me crazy. You're making me crazy. The only games that will even take... Nobody's going to have Wii U as the lead platform on a Call of Duty game. So the only... It's going to be a port anyway. And the only games that are going to take advantage of whatever that marginal improvement is going to be a Zelda.
Don't confuse... let's be careful about terminology here. I think that what you won't see anymore are ports. You will see engine-based games, and in the engine-based game system...
They'll optimize themselves, is what you're saying. You'll be optimized based on the hardware.
All you have to do is change the art resources. So if your art... And
so
you
think
you can
the
run,
Wii...
Think about it this way. Think about it in gradations of PCs. Right now, you have a mid-top-tier PC. But there is someone who has a little bit more top-tier PC than you have, right? And if they're running an Unreal Engine game, they can turn
on... No one has a better PC than I have.
They can turn on more features than you can.
There can be only one.
All right.
I think it's a difficult argument to make to say that you're going to get a title that's available on all three platforms or four platforms and say that
four platforms?
Including PC, Xbox, PS3, and Wii U, that you're going to want to have it on the Wii U instead of the other ones.
What are those titles?
Outside of Nintendo titles, Batman. It's going to be difficult to say that I want...
Just entertain my fantasy. It could happen.
I want...
It could happen.
It could, but I...
I just threw it out there as it could happen.
I would like to see the game that makes that argument possible.
I like the optimism.
I still regret...
I applaud that. Yeah,
I still regret buying the Wii.
Do you really?
Oh,
I do.
No.
I do not.
I can list half a dozen to 10 amazing experiences I had with
that. Yeah. But compared... Like, if I was a one-console gamer... If I was a one-console gamer... I would, that would be one of the biggest regrets. I mean, like, it's.
How many one console gamers bought Wii's by themselves?
Well, probably.
Mine was a gift.
Probably a lot, but they aren't one console gamers in the sense of, like, they're pining away to play something else.
Right.
You know?
No, I mean, I just, I don't know. I think that.
Wait, you honestly regret buying a Wii?
I still look back at the Wii and I go, oh, man, they had a great marketing campaign. And, like, even at the point where they were saying, man, Wii's selling crazy in the media and shit, I was like, what? What are people playing? And I'm like looking and it's like,
I'm going to buy one.
Twilight Princess. Well,
no, I waited a little bit and I think I bought, it was Twilight Princess was the thing. I mean, that was fairly close to launch. Or
and you
it was
argue,
launch.
You can't argue with that, right?
Super Mario Galaxy was the best title for that console.
Super Mario Galaxy is an amazing game. I would not have given up that
experience. No. Actually, interesting question. What's the best title for that console?
Skyward
Sword is amazing.
Admittedly, I'm the kind of guy that would probably buy a console just to play one really fucking sweet game that I wanted to play. Like, right. I'm one of those freakazoids.
Like Wii Sports.
Like Wii Sports.
I just can't get enough of the bowling. Wii Sports, man. Golf. I spent hours and hours playing golf. I was so glad when Sports Resort came out, so I was like, yes, another course! Yeah. Okay, that's a conversation for another time.
All right, we have gone all over the place in the discussion.
Well, there was alcohol.
I am going to call a timeout. When we come back, we still have many, many other things to discuss. Maybe Assassin's Creed 2 won't be one of them. I don't know.
Look at the time. I do have to cut out.
Maybe it won't be one of them. Yeah. So stick around. We will be back for the conclusion of this weekend confirmed. And we are back to wrap up this rousing edition of Weekend Confirmed. So here's where I'm going to go with this one, because we started to talk about it last time, but I didn't feel like we got to it, which is this key to narrative gaming. This is the formula that Atanatari 165 came up with on Shack News. And if you are not already, you should be dropping by the official thread on shacknews.com every week, where we talk about the show and get into these sorts of discussions. Atanatari 165 says, I think good story-driven gameplay has to have three key elements in addition to the obligatory storyline and game mechanics. Those would be interesting characters, unique encounters, and a sense of progress. Action games usually fail to deliver on all three counts. The characters are rarely interesting, and aside from bosses, the encounters are rote. The main thing I think is missing from most action games today is unique encounters. In the ideal game, the player would never face the same challenge twice. This is part of the secret sauce behind what made old-school point-and-click adventures and RPGs like Baldur's Gate so great. Every area has unique challenges, and there's very little repetition. The lack of creativity in many games today is really depressing, considering how many millions of dollars go into each one.
Hmm. Boom.
Yeah.
I concur.
You agree?
I mean, there's a lot to that. There's a lot to that. Yeah, there's a lot to be said for that. I was just having a conversation last night at a 4th of July party about the days gone by and how games used to be. We were thinking about Planescape Torment and the old Fallouts. Yeah.
Then you're like, where are my pills?
I did say that.
Planescape Torment is up there amongst my most amazing games ever.
It's an incredible game. I would love to replay it, but I fear I don't know if it would hold up. Would it hold up?
It would hold up. It would hold up because I think the design is so different and unique from any other sort of role-playing game you've played.
People pine away for remaking Final Fantasy VII. How come nobody's asking them to remake Planescape?
People have asked them to update Planescape to at least get it to run more easily. Yeah. But I think the license, I think it's licensing hell for one thing.
Ah.
Oh, who do? I don't know who owns that. Yeah, that's weird.
All that TSR stuff, though, is in Funny Spaces, I think. I think. I don't actually know. Someone in the thread, tell us what's going on with Planescape license and why someone couldn't just do it. Like, look, there's Kickstarters for everything else. I feel like, by the way, total random aside, I feel like someone is just going through my old library of PC Gamer magazines and thumbing through and picking games and going, oh, let's do a Kickstarter to revive that. Oh, yeah. Let's do a Kickstarter to revive
that. Two guys
that.
From Andromeda, man. They made their goal. 500
grand. They did. Nice.
Pretty exciting.
How many of these do I actually want? That's a whole other question. Anyway, back to the narrative thing. I feel like this description that he's given, or he or she at Atari 165 gave here, perfectly applies to Assassin's Creed 2. Oh, you thought I wasn't going to get there.
Damn it.
I think he was hoping.
like an assassin. He just dropped down and stabbed me with his wrist knives.
And what's keeping me really going in Assassin's Creed 2 is Ezio, because I think Ezio is an amazingly cool character. I really like digging on him, although he does sort of look like he ought to be from a Disney adventure cartoon of some sort. I'm not really sure why. But something about
it. Is it the flowing locks of hair?
Maybe. I'm not really sure. However, the repetition falls right back into place here. And those people, maybe I was oversold. And I think the big argument I heard on Twitter so far is that, you have to understand, in the time, it was only 3 years ago, number one. It was such an advance from one. Actually, not so much. It has a great storyline. It has things that are working really well through it. But it's still very repetitious. So how could Assassin's Creed 3 build on these ideas? What would it have to do to have unique encounters and a sense of progress?
I think it would have to have an amazing panel at Comic-Con. What do you think, Andrew?
I think so, too. Yes, indeed. I mean,
do I have to establish a no whiskey rule?
Wait, no. Come on. Let's be honest. This isn't a jump from Assassin's Creed 2 to Assassin's Creed 3. You're leaving out Brotherhood and Revelations. Those mechanics that they've updated along the way are going to be incorporated into Assassin's Creed 3. Yes, it's probably the same engine. It is the same engine. But it's like
they're on an annual return cycle. Look, the big selling point to me was the promise that was held out to me was you need to play Assassin's Creed 2 because it fixes everything that was bad in Assassin's Creed 1. And frankly, it doesn't.
Well, it gives you more. I
mean,
it gives you more variety. Like, I mean, the first
go back
possible
and read the
to know, it's like so many years ago.
I know.
Like, I don't even know why we're talking about this game.
It was because it was a one-armed man. He was here 4 years ago. Damn it.
I love the revisionist history. Like, we talk about how we should talk about games that we like and that we're playing, and Assassin's Creed 2 was supposed to be this, you know, this pillar of a big advancement for the series and a great game around which all these sequels were built, and now you guys are just very quickly...
That was a hell of a lot better than the first one.
Now you're very quick to poke fun at me and be like, why are you even playing that? Why are we going to talk about it? Well, I thought we were going to talk about it because it was supposed to be fucking important.
It is important. You're right.
No, and here's the thing. If the whole free running parkour thing doesn't get you and isn't a lot of fun, they could do whatever they want to that series. And
it does. But one of the things I think they've never done right is the free running parkour thing.
And I agree.
What?
I agree
no.
with that.
What do
yes.
you mean?
They are in the... Hold a button and push a direction.
No. It's not Uncharted.
But it's parkour. Not hold a button and push a direction. It's hold a button and push a direction as if you were safe, except for when you're not, and then you go flying the wrong direction and take massive damage. It's ridiculous how inconsistent it is. Because one minute you're pushing... User error my ass, because it's not user error when I'm pushing the stick and holding the button and magically bouncing from bar to bar to rooftop to chimney top, and then, oh, the last one's the wrong one, you just jump to your death. That's bullshit. They couldn't decide where they wanted you to be safe and have fun free running, or if they wanted it to be risky, so they chose this middle ground to where it's, oh, you're running and shit might be in jeopardy because you might make a misstep, and if you do, we'll just let you reload. It's bullshit.
Wait, but that sounds like a video game. It sounds like a video game to me. Like, it's
well,
sometimes it's safe and sometimes it's not, and you did something wrong and now you have to reload.
But you don't know when you're going to do something wrong. You don't have any idea when you're going to do something wrong. It's like they're trying to give you this idea of safety to go play and have fun.
Would you rather have a safety net the whole time and never make a mistake?
That's the question that I think is the core question here.
Enslaved handled it quite that way.
And Prince of Persia. Yeah. That's the big question, and no one has the balls to do it. And then when they do, some people will get really pissed. Like, you have to decide, do you want to be – is this game about the platforming action? And if it is, then I shouldn't be able to just push the stick forward and press A and hold the right trigger and magically go from piece to piece.
The
because
platforming...
if your game is telling me I can go magically from piece to piece because I have the skills, then necessarily I would have the skill to not jump to my death like an idiot.
But the platforming action is just a piece of what's great about that game. It's just one factor.
And it's not about the actual act of, you know, I mean, it would be just as problematic if you were pumping the triggers to, like, you know, move your feet left, right, up. You know, if it was really intricate platforming, it's more about like, okay, I'm at the ground level. I'm looking up this huge 30-story structure. How do I get to the top of it?
Okay.
Right.
Push a button, let me do that. Forward.
But it's never,
to a large degree.
No, you can't do that. There's a number of towers that you have to strategically find which side of the building you have to go up at which
time. You rotate around them until you find the one that has the little handholds that go straight at the side of
Sometimes
it.
Sometimes it's really challenging depending on which level you're at and what place you're doing or climbing up. Don't give me that look. It's not easy. Not all segments are easy. Some are easier.
Yeah, it's not
than
easy
others.
Because you might get halfway up and it might decide that when you pushed left and held the trigger at the same time, instead of going around the column, you wanted to jump off 150 feet to your death.
No, A button is the one thing that'll make you jump.
Yeah, don't push the A
button. Don't push the A button.
Which is counterintuitive to a lot of things. But once you get that much down.
Other than that, you'll stick to the wall. Just it's no A button.
That's bad.
User error.
So even if it is strictly user error, are you telling me that the game should just boil down to user error? What kind of experience is that?
No, I'm saying I agree that Assassin's Creed 2 probably wasn't the best for that mechanic, but they have greatly improved the climbing mechanics as the game has
really, gone
along.
Really, what do they do different?
I find that when I was playing, I noticed a big difference between how many times I would, as you say, fall to my death in Brotherhood than when I did it in Revelations. Now, I don't know if
that's... I like how you put that in inverted commas, like no one has ever said that before.
Well,
he literally fell and then died.
Yes.
That's how you say that.
And I
fell
think
to my
probably
death.
More of I, by playing the game successively, all the games in the franchise, I feel like I've gotten better at it in that way. That's why I'm not falling as much. I'm better at scaling and climbing things and faster at it than I was because I have more practice. I mean, that's a gain. It's gaming in general. Think about Call of Duty. If you just started playing now at Modern Warfare 3, would you be as good as someone who started at, you know, one of the earlier Call of Duty games? Of course you wouldn't.
No, but I wouldn't run around the corner and when I went to reload, throw my M16 down the hallway by accident.
That's not a fair comparison, and you know it.
It's a hilarious guy.
That is a feature we need in the
you
next Call of Duty.
You can't drop your gun
it's
in Call
like
of Duty.
It's like I'm fucking
okay?
Mr. Bean. I come. Oh shit! Ah!
All right, I have to leave. That's I have hit my quota of Assassin's Creed talk.
Oh,
my finishing move today is.
Hold on, yes, hold on. Finishing
out.
Move?
No, I don't have one.
You don't have one.
I mean, I have. Please come to the TRS panel of Friday night at 8 o'clock if you're coming to Comic Con. I would love to see We Can Confirm fans there to shove it in Dan and Alex's face.
Yeah.
So come
when are Dan and Alex going to come back on? We need to have them on.
Dude. Yeah.
What?
Let's have them on.
Sweet.
Ask them is what he's saying.
Dude,
yeah. Make it happen.
Sweet,
dude.
Make it happen.
Sweet.
All right,
Del Rio says, holla
Sorry,
at your boy.
Run, but I gotta go. All right.
Bye. All right.
Fun talking
about
Jeff.
That game that came out like 6 years ago.
Be good, Jeff.
Ask Creed 2.
I'm drinking the rest of your drink, you pussy. Look at that. You left the whole thing there. Oh. Disappointing.
Yeah, for you.
Anyway, I still think there's a valid point of extension here about like what can Assassin's Creed 3 do to actually build on that, because where I was getting was the promise of Assassin's Creed 2 was that it was going to be better than Assassin's Creed 1.
And if you go back and play Assassin's
and
Creed 1,
better,
yes.
It is better.
Incremental.
So it followed through.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, okay, and here's the thing.
So suddenly now I'm looking at stuff like there's going to be 25 animals to hunt, and I realize what this means is I'm going to be standing at the top of another fucking tree after I press Y to synchronize, and there's going to be another goddamn bunch of little bear heads on my map that where I can go fight a bear.
Well, no, but that it's subtle stuff.
That's not subtle.
No, that isn't like.
And tell me that's not what's going to happen.
Why would they want to focus on fighting animals in a game that's about the Revolutionary War?
Because there's
War.
25 species of animals for you to hunt and skin.
Or tame.
And get pelts.
No, I agree that that's kind of a superfluous mechanic to put in.
Superfluous.
Yeah.
It is. Just like collecting artwork or buying books in some of the previous games kind of felt unnecessary. It felt like this
so
there's
another
side
question.
Thing to do.
So you played Brotherhood and Revelations?
Yeah. Yes.
You played Brotherhood. You reviewed for us.
Yes, I did.
So obviously, I've read the reviews and talked to a number of people who played them. They played that section up. Why would they pick that to play up?
Who played that up?
The designers.
Because they're proud of their little side quests.
They clearly put a lot more work into it. The whole build up the villa part of Assassin's Creed 2, I'm like, this isn't, like, why is this part of the game?
It's unnecessary. I mean, it's novelty at a certain point. You get to the point where you have so much money in the game, you can literally go to an art shop or bookshop and buy everything out.
The economy has gotten less and less broken with each iteation. However, it is still kind of a broken
economy. Well, and then later in the series, was it Brotherhood or Revelation where they incorporated the idea of calling in henchmen to support you and create
That was Brotherhood, yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of cool, but do we really
need
all
It gets cooler with each iteration of the game.
So how does that then figure into 3?
We don't know. They have said that it's going to be part of 3, of course, because it's like this main mechanic they've built into the game, but they haven't really gone into detail about it yet.
Yeah, I mean, look, all these new mechanics, when they're talking about 3, they're talking to a fan base that's already played probably at least one other game, maybe 2, maybe 3, maybe 4. And so it's all about, okay, here's the extra layer of stuff we're throwing on top of it. New setting is a huge extra layer of stuff, you know, but mechanically they've been like sort of honing and refining stuff. And yeah, there isn't a single mechanic that is like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. But it's the combination of how many choices and options you have, you know, just the being able to jump out of a tree and assassinate somebody with any weapon in your arsenal, as opposed to just your blades, is pretty cool. You know, it's like
crazy yelling and screaming aside.
Yeah.
The part that I am complaining about is that the promise of Assassin's Creed 2, and I think that, and obviously I have a great way to do hindsight 2020 here, because obviously, you know, it's like 3 years ago, and I'm playing Assassin's Creed 2 now, and I can look back and say, look, Ezio was a great character.
Yeah.
And the story, really very fun. You've got Leonardo da Vinci, you've got all these historical elements that are played right into it. It's very, very cool how you get this very strong sense of place for Florence, and now I'm on my way to Venice, and all of those elements really work together, and then it's so abruptly contradicted by the rote gameplay, back to the same thing, and it makes all of those gamey issues really just like jump out and slap you in the face, which I think is what at an Atari is talking about, of needing a little more fidelity to what you can do in the world. Yeah. Because everything else is up there.
Oh, no, and what he's saying actually made me think a lot of, and I won't talk about Spec Ops. I know you guys have talked about that to death.
Hey, welcome to say whatever you want. I mean, we can talk about it.
So Spec Ops and the Uncharted series are basically have the same exact problem. Uncharted handles it a lot better than Spec Ops does, just because it's a much better looking game overall, I think. But really what it is you're trying to tell a story, and the only thing you're allowing the player to do is run around and shoot crap, right? That's the only way that the player has to interact with your narrative. So if you're trying to tell something beyond, all right, you got to kill 300, 400, 500 guys, you run into problems with you're having to trick the player into, you know, these emotional moments, because they're really not doing anything other than pointing a gun at somebody and blowing them away, which I think is the core problem of any shooter that tries to...
Which, I'll give you this, as you say that, it stands out to me to say, well, actually, Assassin's Creed really tries to fight that.
Yeah,
they try to give you more things to do.
They absolutely do. I don't think they're even in the same league as the gameplay of the Uncharted series and Spec Ops. I mean, there's so much more in the world. I mean, besides the fact that they're open world, first and foremost, like, and then there's mounted combat in the games, and then there's this whole inventory system and how you use that. There's different guild factions. You have to build up your recruits and level them up individually. And
that's in later games, not in 2.
Okay, that's probably true. But again, why are you playing 2?
Because that was the seminal game. That was the one where people said, look, you know what? There was 1 that held a lot of promise. But with 2, they realized it.
Well, if you look at the missions in 1, there were whatever, however many mission types there were, 5 or 6, right? And every time you did a mission of that type,
cookie cutter.
It was totally cookie cutter. Like, I mean, I think one of the first things I got rid of was missions from one where you would sit on a bench and eavesdrop on someone, and you're like, why is this?
You're still making cookies. It's just like you're using the same batter, but you have different shapes.
Well, yeah, but they've improved on the combat a little bit. They could go way more Arkham City with it, and I think be a lot better for it. Just having more timing based and stuff, but that is something they do
later on.
Yeah, they've gotten better and better and better. It's still not the best, but everything in that series has sort of improved. You're asking me why I'm a big fan of it. It has a lot to do with the things that you touched on. It's the characters, narrative, the setting, like all the stuff you get to do. And yeah, I do have my moments where I'm like, okay, I'm running across the rooftops for the umpteen millionth time, trying to jump on some dude, stab him in the back. Like, I get it. I just like being in that world.
And the historical settings is
fantastic. And I see that American team they have working on it is great.
I see that American Revolution stuff, and I'm like, God, I want to play that game. Yeah, it looks so freaking cool.
Yep.
Maybe not the hunting part, but everything else. Everything else.
The Boston demo that they showed at E3, please tell me you saw that.
Don't play dumb.
I'm asking you straight out.
Is that the one in the Whaler City with, like, you turned into a fish? And
yes, that's the one. You picked it. Congratulations, you're a winner.
Oh, I always wanted to be a winner. Yay.
You guys are both winners.
Where else are we going to go? A couple of quick things I wanted to make sure we touched on in this show because they're interesting. First of all, what do you guys think about Sony buying Gaikai for $380 million? Sony Computer Entertainment CEO Andrew House said of the acquisition, SCEE will deliver a world-class cloud streaming service that allows users to instantly enjoy a broad array of content ranging from immersive core games with rich graphics to casual content anytime, anywhere, on a variety of internet-connected devices.
You think that will help them sell more Vitas?
I don't even think that... I wonder about Sony's fragmentation and whether they're actually even thinking about Vita right now. I think this was absolutely a play to fix the fact that they are tied to Android in their mobile devices, both tablet and handheld. And look, a lot of people are looking at how do you tackle the Android space for gaming. iOS gaming has been huge. Android has still sort of been a struggle. Gamefly, who is our parent company and who I'm now in mobile publishing with, obviously we're looking at ways to tackle this. And I think Sony's answer was, we deliver PlayStation games through a streaming service to every single PlayStation device out there.
Which is a really smart business move.
I think it's good. I think right now, and at least for the foreseeable future, for the end user, it doesn't make any difference. Like, this is all here's an infrastructure we can use to build out future.
Would you go buy a PlayStation mobile device if I told you, you know what, Jeff, you can play any PlayStation game ever on your new PlayStation tablet?
It would depend on the device and how good the device was.
It looks like an iPad, except it has a USB port inside of it where you can attach a dongle or a controller and play PlayStation games on this.
I got an iPad already. That's my mobile gaming solution.
Okay.
So the answer is no. And the answer is no to Nintendo and no to anybody else that comes out with a handheld unless they do something that isn't so expensive and
Andrea?
I don't agree with that. I have an iPad too, but the PlayStation tablet is actually a pretty great device.
It's a very capable tablet.
And it syncs with a controller, so if you have a kickstand for your tablet, you can have that handheld controller experience. It's great for people who travel a lot.
It's already set to run Gaikai, so imagine like adding Gaikai within
I think that's a fantastic service, and I think it's something people really want and will purchase, because Apple's hardware has such a high entry level. People are like, yeah, you can buy iOS games for 99 cents, for $1.99, $2.99. I go, yeah, but the fucking thing's $800 to buy.
It's not $800. Are you John Davison?
Okay, if you buy the lowest level one, it's like $500, $600 bucks, right? And by the time you get like put tax on there, and if you buy the protection
what
plan,
what state
or
do you
whatever,
live in that your tax California, is $300?
California is 10% tax.
That's
all right?
$550, not $800.
Okay, so I over exaggerated for the highest end model of the iPad, because if you're gaming a lot, you need a lot of hard drive space because you're buying
a lot
of games.
They don't have hard drives.
Well, whatever.
If
you
I'm
know
plugging,
what I mean.
If I'm plugging a controller into my tablet, if I'm plugging a controller into my tablet, the first thought that runs through my mind is, why the fuck am I not playing on a laptop? Like, I mean, other than size, like, why do I need this extra thing? Like,
if I've gotten to that stage where I'm like plugging in peripherals and all that. A laptop experience gaming is different than a controller experience. Now, I'm not, I agree.
I'm talking about plugging a controller into a laptop, which is something you can do right now. Like, you can take your laptop and be like, oh, I want to play blah, 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 and you plug your controller in, and there you go. It's the same. Like, I don't get what the advantage of is of having another separate device that is like a laptop, except thinner and no keyboard and all that stuff. And
then you plug a controller into it. What if you didn't have a laptop? What if you had a desktop and you wanted and you had a tablet? And you wanted to buy a tablet and you were in the market for one?
Well, I mean, I did just buy an iPad, but like, they fill different needs right now. Like, I'm not trying to do the thing that my PC is doing on my, you know, on my handheld device. I'm not trying to have the console experience on. They're all very much like, I appreciate that they put Grand Theft Auto 3 on an iPad, but I'm not going to play it, you know, on the iPad and enjoy it as much as I would on a PS2 or PS3 or whatever. I don't know.
Another implication for the acquisition of Gaikai goes directly to the issue of backward compatibility. So for a long time, PlayStation has struggled with how do we handle backward compatibility? We promised it on PlayStation 3. We delivered it on our first model, and then we immediately took it out. We reduced the ability, and then we took it all the way out. But through Gaikai, it seems to give them the ability to run PlayStation games on remote servers and give you access anywhere. How quickly do you project that they'll be getting this involved in PlayStation 3 and future iterations of PlayStation?
Well, and that's not really backwards compatibility, though. That's them being able to resell older titles to you. Backwards compatibility is, hey, I bought a game for my Dreamcast. I'm going to slap it into my new console and it's going to work.
Which is kind of...
Thank you, Jeff. Backward compatibility is you own a game. I'm so glad. By the way, folks, I did not prompt him to do that. I love you. That was the point I was going to make. You just stole my thunder. But I love that because that's the point. Backward compatibility means I own a game and I can play the damn thing.
Yeah.
Not on
new hardware. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. What they're doing is a great business move, and people will probably buy, you know, Eco or whatever for the third time. You know, sure. There's some games that I will buy because I played them already, but...
Hey, if you haven't already played it, I'm excited to see things that get remade. Like, if there are HD update, the announced recently, I think it was yesterday, of Nights into Dreams version coming out this fall on PSN, Xbox Live, and PC. I'm excited for that. I think that's really cool. It was only on Saturn, so there's a number of people who've never played it. It is a really cool game. It has a feel to it that, you much like Sonic had a really unique feel that you can only explain to someone if they've really played it, and they go, wow, like there's the Sonic feel. Knights had this amazing, not 2D, not 3D, but flying, like really cool sense of motion and control in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's great to see a new audience access that.
Yeah,
so
no,
I'm excited about that. But that's not backward compatibility.
No. Remakes, I'm fine with. Nobody's forcing you to buy those if they're really good or if it's a great game that you're really nostalgic about. But then that goes back to the frustration that I have with this medium in general, which is that, you know, there are some games that I loved from back in the day that are just not playable anymore.
Yeah.
That I cannot. I'll have to go to a museum somewhere where they resurrect old PCs, you know, it's like,
and Gaikai is now out of the running for that because they are a Sony product now.
Yes.
Yep.
So that's another interesting angle to this. I'm really curious to see what you guys out there listening think of the Sony acquisition of Gaikai. If you're not familiar with Gaikai, it is similar to OnLive. It is a cloud-based game streaming service. It was not prominent in the public space because it was primarily working with publishers. For instance, Electronic Arts was using it for game demos on Facebook that then tied into their sales so that you could play the game for a little while and then go buy it through the EA store. It's yet to be seen how those relationships will develop in the future. It's certainly yet to be seen what Sony will do with it. Vita was something hardcore gamers immediately talked about. Mobile space people are obviously thinking it's going to be Android. And then we talked about backward compatibility. None of us, I think, thinks that Sony has the capability to integrate this into their services and launch all these things at once.
No.
It will be very interesting to see where they go with it. I'd love to hear what you guys think about it. And right now, what you're going to hear from us is our finishing moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
Well, that was not the Mortal Kombat quickie one, but we'll use it anyway, Jeff Mattis.
Yeah.
You may finish them.
Okay, so I guess I just want to talk about it. I've been playing a lot of iOS stuff again, and there are a few things that I ran into that are actually really fun. There's a game called Yesterday for old school adventure game fans, really nice touchscreen interface,
thing going on with the game. It is basically you start off exploring a subway looking for, you know, homeless people or people that are in need of aid to help. And you run across a satanic cult and things go kind of crazy. So it's pretty neat, neat animation, neat art style.
Do you believe in it?
Do I? No.
You don't believe in yesterday?
Well, suddenly. I believe in yesterday.
My troubles feel so far away.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah, exactly. The other iOS title that I'd like to sort of talk about is Plague Incorporated.
Yeah.
Made by a shacker.
Correct. Yes, it is. Really, really awesome.
You can't fight the Red Death.
Awesome job. Yeah. So you get to name your own disease and try to destroy all of humanity. It's a strategy game. It's a buck. iOS. Really, really fun on both iPad and iPhone. It's definitely worth checking out.
Excellent. Andrea?
My finishing move is I highly encourage any PlayStation 3 owners, since we were just talking about Sony, to consider, if not urge you to get a PlayStation Plus membership.
Oh, I saw you tweet about this.
I did tweet about it earlier today. So you're
on the take now.
Well, no, I'm not. I'm not on the Sony payroll, nothing. I'm a diehard Xbox Live fan and supporter, always have been. But, I mean, ever since the E3 press conference when Sony kind of announced they're going to be rolling out a bunch more kind of benefits for PlayStation Plus subscribers, there's been, like, they've opened the floodgates for the amount of amazing games that you get to download for free if you are a PlayStation Plus member. And this week, they have Renegade Ops, they have Gotham City Impostors, they have Pac-Man Championship DX Edition. They have a number of really great games that you can play and download completely for free, the full versions of the game, if you're a PlayStation Plus
no argument
member. So
it's very interesting. You know, they looked, I think, at how they were tackling PlayStation Plus and getting subscribers, and they made a very conscious decision, apparently, to turn it into a game delivery system through which they would give you, as a gamer, a subscription for which you pay, you know, what is it?
It's $60 a year, just like
so
Xbox Live Gold.
It's like $5 a month, and for your $5 a month, you're going to get consistent content that you have something new to play. So it's like Columbia Record Club or whatever, where you've got these games coming in for a very flat fee, and you get something new to play. It's an interesting decision. A lot of people on the threads for the show have asked over the last couple of weeks, what do you think of this? I think the jury's out, but I think your conviction to talk about it today says that there's certainly a lot of people who think that it's a pretty cool idea.
I think if you compare Xbox Live Gold to PlayStation Plus, the value for your dollar is so much more with PlayStation than it is with Xbox. And it saddens me to say that because I really love Xbox, but what do I get for being a Gold member? You know what I mean? Like, can you, like, list
Sony
off?
Sony loves that you said that because what they...
I mean, it's
because
just
exactly,
it's just facts,
exactly,
you know?
What they said. What they set up was a tangible game that you get, or a set of games that you get every month that you can put a dollar value to, whereas Xbox is still about, oh, will you have a better matchmaking service? Well, I get matchmaking on PlayStation Network for free, and you have better friend system. Oh, well, I have friends on PlayStation Network. It's very hard to put a dollar figure on what's it worth to be able to do cross-game invite.
Right, yeah, that's a hard sell.
I don't know. Yeah. Is that worth $50? $5? $500? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
But so they nailed it down.
Yeah, so that's my finishing move. If you own a PlayStation, consider going Plus if you haven't.
I'm kind of torn on my finishing move here. I was going to talk about Halo 4 requiring an install, which I think is fascinating.
Yeah.
But it's really not that big a deal because an 8 gig flash drive to do the multiplayer install is so cheap. It's like... I didn't even realize until I looked it up because I have so many stupid USB sticks floating around now. USB sticks have gotten incredibly cheap.
Oh, yeah.
So let's call that a non-issue. And instead, let's talk about SimCity Social for a minute.
Oh, yes.
SimCity Social. By the way, EA, pot, kettle, black. This is a fucking Ville game. And the next time you want to stand in your glass house and throw rocks at Zynga about, well, they don't have an original idea in their entire body. Yeah, go look at SimCity Social because there is nothing original about this in any way, shape, or form. My God, even the look and feel of the game is textbook Zynga. Textbook Zynga. Andrew has been working on a story for Shack News, which we'll have going up in the next day or two. I played along with him because obviously a big part of it is to have social interaction with your friends. And
it's in the title, social.
all it does is scream how much we missed the idea of SimCity and how much the Ville game. It screams how much social games miss what's cool about game games.
That's a really good point, actually. Because you're like, it's got the visual splash, and then you get in there and you're like, wait, there's nothing here.
And that's the problem. Yeah. It just makes me want to play SimCity that much more, because what's great about the feeling of accomplishment of building a great city in SimCity is knowing all of the logistical and societal hurdles you overcame to get it working together. And all you overcame in SimCity Social or Cityville is clicking another click into the thing and telling another friend, please send me another widget because I need another widget.
Although, to be fair, you probably would not play the new SimCity for 5 minutes at a time.
No. No.
But yeah, it's definitely not.
But I'd get a lot more out of it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For real.
All right, folks. So we'll wrap this sucker up. Big thanks, of course, to our friends at Fireball Whiskey. You can follow them on Twitter at Fireball Whiskey with no E between the K and the Y at the end. Miss Andrea Renee from Machinima.
Yeah, buddy.
Where she will be streaming all kinds of fantastic exclusive content, world exclusives, on Machinima.com from San Diego Comic-Con.
Comic-Con's going to be really crazy for us. We're really excited. We're launching a bunch of new stuff. Machinima Prime is launching during Comic-Con. We have so many cool shows that we're doing, so I really, like, I mean, and obviously Halo Forward Unto Dawn is, like, our big flagship thing that we're debuting, so we're really excited about it. We really, you know, would love for you to check
them
it out.
Quite as good as Shaq News Daily, though.
I don't know. Armed and Dangerous from FPS Russia looks pretty cool. And X-Arm from the founders of the UFC looks pretty awesome, too.
They're not quite as good. They're not quite as good. They're close.
You haven't even seen anything. You
don't
even know what you're talking about.
I don't even need to see them.
Don't make me say that Ryan was better at it. Don't make me say it.
Go ahead. Try.
No, you're not the best, Garnet.
Aw. And then, of course, Jeff Cannata and the Totally Rad Show will be down at San Diego Comic-Con. If you are there, you should check out their panel. If not, you'll be able to see all of their goings on there during their show on thetotallyradshow.com during the following week. Mr. Jeff Mattis can be caught every day on The Shack.
Yep,
and
or at Jeff Mattis on Twitter.
And big thanks, of course, to the Atlantis Group, where we have the big boss behind the board controls today. And what am I saying? Speaking of big boss behind the board controls, we have Dave Del Rio coming at you next week with Club Tipsy in its full release version, available on digital providers wherever you might be looking for them. It'll be on Spotify as well. He was telling me he's got a cool deal set up so you can listen to it anywhere you are on the internet, folks. Grab that. That is Del Rio's Club Tipsy. With that, that is it, folks. Weekend confirmed, and we are Ghost. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Yeah, come on. It took a minute for me to see what was going down. Body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hit me with another round. I gotta finish, she's ready. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, iPad, Android tablets, and other mobile devices.